Well, all right. This is happening. A little fill-in on the overnight. Nick DiGilio, of course, off tonight. Nick D. What's Nick D doing, Dan Shugru? Do you know?
He's recovering from the flashback horror convention slash his movie screening last night of I Want to Hold Your Hand. So that
sounds about right.
Yep.
Yeah. So I get to fill in tonight. Brian Noonan was supposed to be here, but apparently Brian Noonan is doing something major in the TV world. I don't exactly know what it is, but it's big time because Brian Noonan would never miss a shift. So congratulations to Brian Noonan. So, and in fact, I'm the C team tonight. I do not take offense at that. I am thrilled to be the C team tonight. Welcome in to your overnight extravaganza. My name is Mark Carmen. Esmeralda Leon in traffic. Esmeralda, hello.
Hello.
Have you ever had a moth fly into your ear?
Good Lord, no.
Did you
Don't they just go to the light?
Well, that's what I thought.
Did you have a light in your ear?
Dan, have you ever had a moth fly in your ear?
Not in my ear. In the face region, but not my ear.
You had one in the face region?
Yeah, because whenever I go out, I walk out my door, you know, to come here, we have the outside light on. And so it is just a bastion for insects. So every time I walk outside, there's two or three buzzing around me.
Do you freak out? What's your
standard? It usually depends on, you know, the proximity and things like that. But I do, you know, there's a joke that when people walk into a spider web, it's the best interpretive dance moves you will ever see in your life because they all, you know, you do this funky motion, you know, with your body because you're like, where is it? How do I get it off me?
Right.
It's the same type of thing happens when I walk out my door because there's a moth coming at me.
I'm a freak out guy, full freak out. The reason why I'm bringing this up, team, and hey, Vic Vaughn, are you with me?
I can relate. I've never had a moth, but I have had a cockroach stuck in my ear before.
Oh my God, for reals?
Yeah, I was in South Korea, and we were sleeping on the ground, and one crawled in there, and it buried so deep in there that a medic had to get it out the following morning.
Wait, hold on a second. So you slept with a cockroach in your ear?
No, I didn't get any sleep that night because it was burrowing and scratching all night. So,
and you couldn't get it out?
No, I couldn't even feel it. It was so far in there.
Esmeralda, are you under the table?
That is my worst nightmare. Right.
I've never seen Esmeralda stand up during a story.
That is a true nightmare.
It was pretty disturbing.
All right, well, the reason why I'm bringing this up, and this is a great way to start the show, 312-981-7200, worst things that have ever happened to you with insects, would love to hear it. At the White Sox game tonight, second base umpire, his name is Bruce Breckman, longtime guy, and he had to leave the game in the ninth inning because a moth flew in his ear. He ran... You might be able to find audio of this, Dan, on Twitter somewhere. I don't know. But he ran into the first base dugout, and Johnny Trainer guy stuck whatever he stuck into his ear, and they pulled the moth out. And they were just holding this moth in the dugout, and then the dude like looks at the moth, Bruce Breckman, the umpire, after this moth was in his ear, and then he just ran back out there to second base to finish up umping the game. But I've never seen that in my life. A moth into your ear, I would lose my mind. That's tough sledding right there. That is a serious level of strength that I personally do not possess. But of course, Vic Vaughn is tougher than me and slept with a cockroach in his ear. I didn't realize we were going to get there right at the gate here, 110. But that's amazing. Congratulations, Vic. I'm impressed. But yeah, that was the highlight of the White Sox game tonight. They lost 7-3 to the Yankees. Nothing worse than losing to the Yankees. I have serious Yankee envy. But yeah, he had a moth fly into his ear.
I do have 10 seconds of Benetti talking about it.
Yeah, let's hear what Jason said.
Watching, we have footage of a bug flying out of Bruce Dreckman's ear. Oh, jeez. Come on now.
Yeah, I mean, Benetti was beside himself, flat out. Jason does a great job, by the way. I'm super impressed by his work since he's gotten here and just, like, keeps getting better and better. But, yeah, tonight there was a moth in an umpire's ear. Yeah, worst thing to ever happen to you with an insect, 312-981-7200. Welcome to your overnight. We have a very interesting, busy, different show for you tonight. We're going to talk about accountability tonight. I have an accountability expert. coming on at 3 o'clock this morning. His name is Sam Silverstein, samsilverstein.com. I feel like, you know, the way we're going about our business these days, team, everyone's pointing at everybody else, right? You didn't do this. You didn't do that. My dad didn't do that. My mom didn't do this. My sister was a jerk. Nobody wants to look in the mirror these days. Nobody wants to, you know, point the finger at old number one. Problems at work. It's this guy's fault. It's that guy's fault. So-and-so's sleeping on the job. So-and-so's showing up late. Dan, how would you say you are at accountability? I feel like you're a very accountable guy.
I try to be. You know, if it's my mistake, I'll own up to it. I mean, the nice thing about working here compared to a lot of other places, especially media, is like we'll take hits for the team. You know, for example, I made a mistake on the show last night and Brian didn't call me out on it on air. He just kind of, you know, let it go and worked around it and just moved on.
What'd you do?
We had a guest on who was part of a show called Yellowstone Live. For the last 4 days, National Geographic had been chronicling, you know, Yellowstone and its various components with like 47 cameramen and things like that. We had a guy who has been flying the helicopter / filming from the helicopter. And so in the write-up for the guest, I accidentally wrote Yosemite Live instead of Yellowstone Live. So Brian referred to it as Yosemite Live a few times. The guest had to correct us, and you know, he was just like, just moved right on. You know,
well, so that's an honest mistake. I mean,
still, you know,
it's not great. It's not great. Reminds me of my days back producing the David Kaplan show, and I believe
that's Walk of Famer Dave Kaplan. Thanks to you.
That's exactly right. I saw good old Cappy today. Was on his TV program over at NBC Sports, and If I did that to Cappy, and believe me, it wasn't a one-time thing with me. There was more than a couple mistakes. If I did that, you know who looks bad, pal? Me, not you. Me. That was the lecture on that one. And he's right. I mean, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely correct. This is a good. I don't want to make any declarations here, but it will never happen again. And of course, it probably happened again once or twice. But that's the accountability. You say you're sorry. I don't like making a mistake is one thing. Consistently underperforming because you don't like your job, but yet you're going to stay in the job because you don't have anything else better, and therefore you're taking the people down around you. Esmeralda, how are you with accountability? What would you say?
For the most part, I think it depends too where I'm at. I think at work I would be more to throw myself on that landmine, uh-huh, on that sword.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not so much at home.
Where do you fall short at home?
Well, you know, if stuff doesn't get done or cleanliness, you know,
right,
there's always the fall guy.
Who's the fall guy at home?
V. My boyfriend.
So it's his fault that the dishes are still,
yeah,
in the sink, that the laundry's not done. Where would you say
sometimes?
Where would you say your biggest blind spot or things you don't want to do?
Would be at home.
Okay, but where at home?
Oh, just...
Like, are you good in the bathroom but not good in the kitchen?
Oh,
you,
no, just, you know, cleaning. Just cleaning in general.
Cleaning in general. Okay.
It gets to be such a chore.
Okay. I think Vic Vaughn's great at accountability. I mean, a military guy, right?
I think you're right. I think holding yourself accountable, you know, that's a level of integrity that you have to try to uphold. And, yeah, I mean, I do my best. If I make a mistake, I generally own up to it.
Yeah, and you're never late, Vic, right?
Being on time's another one, being accountable. That's true, I would say. I'm hardly ever late.
Right, and you probably, like, stay later than most. I always see you, like...
No, that's not true.
That's not true. Okay. All right. I feel like your shift's over at 5, and I still see you in there at 9 o'clock, like, doing some...
No. I'm one of those guys, generally, I'm out of the way. Once my shift's over, I'm...
Okay.
I check out, but I always check. That's nothing. I always check with my coworkers, make sure they don't need me anymore. You know, but
right. All right. I'm working on my accountability. Just for the record, I got to get myself out here. I have a vision of being the guy that's always on time, that always does my stuff, that's always super prepared, that has all the notes taken care of. But then sometimes, not gonna. This is why I want to have this guy. You know, I rely on the talent. I've been great. I've been great my whole life at getting around things. I, you know, high school. I mean, my, you know, I was, everybody was there. I was the only one at home. Progress reports would come. I'd pick them off. I'd get around. I just learn how to get around things. I don't like to follow the rules. I want, you know, I think we've, I've touched on this numerous times. I like to, you know, it's more fun to get around things than to do them the right way, which is that, and that is a disease. That's like a legit, because if you're good at it, you see the ways around, and so you rather, like, it's more exciting to do that. Like, the procrastinators of the world, I know you can relate to me, 312-981-7200. It's like when you're studying to it for a test, if we go old school, it's not exciting to, you know, start prepping 2 weeks out and then being prepared. But what's exciting is doing it at the last second and pulling it off. Like, that's like a fake level of excitement. And somehow that falls into accountability. I don't know if that makes sense, but it somehow resonates with me. So, at any rate, my guy Sam is going to be on here at, say 3 o'clock tonight. It's also, we've got a little history tonight. August 8th, 1988, the first ever night game at Wrigley Field. It was rained out that night. Everybody's got a story from it, so we're going to hit that in the 2 o'clock hour. Murphy's Hot Dogs is going bye-bye, which makes me think about restaurants that I miss and really would love to have back that have gone bye-bye as well. Dan, you've been to Murphy's Hot Dogs?
I've been there once or twice, not consistently.
Is it
delicious?
Delicious.
Good hot dog.
Never been. Feel like I got to go. August 18th, the last day. And coming up at 1:30 here, we're going to do, there's a big, one of the stories that Dan sent me is on what they're doing on dating apps. As far as how we like to date up.
Oh my God, it's crazy.
It's really impressive what they've done here. So we'll have a little fun with the dating world coming up at 1:30. All right, let's take our first little quick timeout. My name is Mark Harmon. I'm in for Nick DiGilio and Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. People weighing in on the text line here on Mothgate. Let's see here. The 219, if you missed the White Sox game tonight, an umpire had a moth fly in his ear. There's a lot of moths at Guaranteed Rate Field, and one of them apparently was a big moth night out there. And the umpire had to leave the field, and they pulled the moth out of his ear. Worst things that have ever happened to you with insects, 312-981-7200. I'd like to apologize to the 3 rats that I killed in the Boundary Waters when I was a camper at Camp Nabagamon. You'd make dinner in these big pots and whatnot. You know, you get the water right out of the lake because no motorboats were allowed, and it rained that night, so we all raced into our tents. You know, us fine 12, 13-year-olds, whatever we were at the time, and the counselors didn't make us clean up because it was raining, and then we'd do it in the morning. Well, we didn't dump out the pots, and so there was like pudding in one of these pots, and these rats jumped in there. They were going to have a feast, but they couldn't get out once they got in, and they drowned. And I apologize. So that really didn't happen to me, but I feel bad that happened. And I don't know why that just came into my head right now at 1:23 a.m. on a Wednesday, Thursday fill-in, but that did happen, Dan. That happened. I feel bad.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a bad job. Should have dumped out the pudding. All right, 219 says, a friend had to go to the ER and have a doctor extract the moth. Anytime it got light out, the moth would flap its wings inside the ear. He said it was a nightmarish and the worst feeling he ever felt. I mean, I don't know. I can't believe you waited. If I had a moth in my ear and I couldn't get it out, I would call 911. I probably would. I don't think I'd even drive myself to the emergency room. Yeah, sir, what's the deal? I have a moth in my ear. I'm losing my mind. 815, moth in my ear was the worst feeling ever. The flapping of the wings was driving me crazy. It was awful. I had killed it with peroxide, but had to go to the doctor the next day to get it flushed out. It worked for a vet, and she tried to get it out and couldn't. She could see it but couldn't reach it, so I had to go to the full doctor. It's amazing what goes on in this world. 715, hi, it's me, Rod, from Wisconsin, and I've heard of moths getting stuck in ears. Not a common thing, but I'd rather have that than what happened to a Hayward, Wisconsin man who had a regular soda set outside and a hornet got into it due to the sugar. He drank it not knowing the hornet was in there, and it stung his throat, and it swelled shut, and he choked to death. There's a moment in time I didn't necessarily need to read that. Should have read that text ahead of time. That's a rough way to go. A hornet stinging to the throat and dead. Yes, I would rather have a moth in my ear than have that happen. Right? Anybody want to debate that one?
I think that's a unanimous choice by the group.
Take a moth in the ear.
Moth. Esmeralda, moth in the ear other than a hornet sting in the neck and dead?
Oh. Yeah, I guess we'll have to go moth.
Yeah.
You're still living. But it's pure torture, apparently.
Have you ever killed an animal accidentally? I'm going to throw that one out there.
Accidental? Like how big?
Well, I'm open to wherever you're going to go.
Are you talking bugs or are you talking large mammals?
I'm talking like I'm talking like a chipmunk. I'm talking like a squirrel. But if you have a large mammal that you accidentally killed, that'd be...
All right, well, that's pretty large, though, for... I mean, killing something.
So you're saying you accidentally like killed a mosquito once that you didn't really mean to kill, you just wanted it to fly away?
Well, you know, if there's not moths, but beetles and things, I feel bad crushing them because I'm like, they didn't do anything. They're just hanging out.
But you did crush them on purpose.
Yeah, well, usually it's a lot of like, and you just flap your arms and then you don't know what it is until you crush it and then you go, oh, I probably shouldn't have done that.
I took a little vacation with my girlfriend up to Boyne Mountain, Michigan, and this was like a tennis camp thing, which was a little bit bizarre that we were the only adults at the tennis camp. It was actually for mainly like junior high and high school kids, but they allowed adults, so I was like, this is a sweet deal. I was super excited about it, and I had a great time. So did she. But we're on the court, and you know, she does not like bugs. And there was this like harmless spider walking around on the court, and she's like, "We kill that." I'm like, "No, I don't want to kill the spider out there. He's in nature. He didn't mean to wander onto the tennis court. Please kill it. I don't want to. Okay, fine. I killed the spider. They eat bugs like that. I feel bad about that. But you know, sometimes you got to pick your battles in life. You want the spider killed, I'll kill the spider. Was I wrong to kill the spider, Dan? Should I have let the spider?
No, when it involves a family member, because I have to hesitate when there's spiders in the house, but then I get the horrors of, like, they're going to find their way upstairs to my daughter's room and bite my daughter somehow, and, you know, even if it's not serious, it's still, you know. I mean, you know, there was that crazy story about, what was it, Kurt Wagner? Not Kurt Wagner. Right, Kurt Wagner from the NFL, right?
Kurt Warner,
that's it. Kurt Warner got a spider bite, allegedly, the day before his Bears tryout, and so he never tried out for the Bears and ended up with the Cardinals and won a Super Bowl. So, you know, but they can have a big effect on you. So, like, in my head, I'm like, all right, that's my justification. I will kill this spider now.
So do you think that spider gave him superpowers?
Yes, that's what it was. The second rejuvenation of his career.
That's unbelievable that you just remember that, Dan.
Well, I was so stunned by it because, like, I'm like, could a spider bite really keep you from having a tryout? And apparently it was bad enough that it did. And then, you know, as he did go on to win a Super Bowl, and I always remember that because it was, he had, you know, the up and down. He had the very mountain-like career, a meteoric career where he went up, and then he went down, and then he went back up again.
1997, the spider bite. The Rams weren't the only team who gave Warner a tryout. They were the team that just ended up signing him. What some may not know is that Chicago was on that list as well. He had a meeting with the team scheduled in 1997, had to bow out at the last second. As legend has it, the quarterback cursed franchise also lost out in 1997 when Warner had to cancel the tryout with the Bears because of a swelling in his right arm caused by a spider bite suffered on his honeymoon. Wow. That was in October of that year. Wow. Bears could have had Kurt Warner? I completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
Well, that would have perhaps been a blessing.
Change some trajectories.
I hate to say it, but I think that worked out well for Kurt Warner. you never know what happens. You know, quarterbacks and coaches and what receivers are around, those things tend to make a difference. That's a whole package deal.
See, no, but your spider was outside.
Right. I feel
so that's a little iffy. It was because in the house, I get it. That's your domain.
Right. Exactly.
Please don't be in here.
Right?
But outside, that's their house.
Yeah, it's terrible. But, I mean...
How big was it? You couldn't have just shoved it off?
I was trying. It was a daddy lawn legs. I was like, get out of here. But he was like, you know, he's in the middle of the court. And I was a little... I mean, would you have picked him up?
No.
Right. Me neither. I wasn't going for the pickup move.
I would have just pretended to not see it.
Right, but
I tried. I hate.
Could you have like hit a tennis ball at it and just try to scare it away?
Or accidentally crush it.
I'm not trying to cast aspersions on your tennis skills if you're not able to do that type of thing.
I mean, in theory, I should be able to do that.
You can't aim at things, Mark.
I was talking to the spider. I'm like, dude, please get out of here. Come on, make a move. Make a move. All right, fine. You're not going to listen. It's going to end for you right here. That's terrible. Mark Harmon in for Nick DiGilio, 720 WGN. Dan Shagru producing, dominating. Esmeralda Leon in traffic. Vic Vaughn with the news. Good to be with you tonight. We're going to get into a little dating here, but we've been discussing accidental killing of animals. It's a fine topic for a Wednesday overnight. And let me mention one more. Before I get to Patty. Actually, Patty, let me let you talk. You call and I don't make you wait super long here.
Oh, that's okay.
Patty,
hi, how are you?
Good morning, Patty.
Good morning. First of all, I just want to tell you that my husband got stung by a hornet for the second time in 2 weeks yesterday. Oh. 2 days ago. So, oh, man, yeah. And one time I had to have an opossum. The police killed an opossum in my yard. Anyway.
Wait, what? You killed a possum in your yard?
No, my police had to shoot a possum with his gun. That was many years ago in my yard. Didn't watch him do it, though, but I was home. Anyway, my story is so sad. We had two parents on our property, and the Canada geese had, I think, five babies this year. So I was watching them, like, almost every day growing up. And then one kind of separated from, I could see the four and the parents, and one was separated from them in our circle driveway. So I called, being an animal lover, I think I called one animal control or whatever service, and I said, well, just watch them. They might, you know, join the mother and babies at night. Well, how am I supposed to do that? I can't see them at night. And I knew that wouldn't happen. So I was going someplace at night, and I was late, and I thought, well, I got to put bird seed in my bird feeder by my circle drive, and usually I go right straight out to the street from my driveway instead of going around my circle.
Okay.
But I went around my circle drive, put the bird seed in the bird feeder.
Good job.
And then realized I had to run over the babies. Here I tried to save his life, and then I ran over him because I was trying to feed my bird seed, to put bird seed in my bird feeder.
Patty.
I felt so bad.
It was an accident. You didn't mean to do that, Patty. How long ago was this, Patty?
Well, it was just some, you know, a few months ago when they had babies.
Okay.
You know, maybe in April, May, you know.
So fairly recent. Yeah. So it's still fresh.
I know, this year. Yeah.
Right. Where do you live, Patty?
In Riverwoods.
In Riverwoods, okay.
Yeah.
I was envisioning you out in the country somewhere, which Riverwoods is a little bit like that, but not quite what I was imagining. All right, well, Patty, I am going to say that as much as you feel bad about this, it was not intentional. It's okay, and you were trying to do right. So,
I know the ironic part was I was trying to save his life, and I killed him. That was the ironic part. So
these things happen. All right, Patty, thank you
bye
so
bye.
Much.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Bye. Thank you for calling. 312-981-7200. Accidental deaths of animals. Patty was trying to fill the bird seed, ran over the duck, killed her. These things happen. There was, I'll tell one more camp story real fast. Guy by the name of, I don't know why I feel like the need to say his name, but why not? His name was fine gentleman from St. Louis, I believe, a David Plotkin, and he would always be sharpening his knife, like, you know, and he would, you know, how you would make sticks really sharp and just different things that kids did back then, and he took this stick that he had sharpened And he was maybe, I think he took the knife and he tried to like scare a chipmunk. So he like flung the knife at the chipmunk. However, rather than just scaring it, he actually punctured the chipmunk with his knife. And that was the end of that chipmunk. And this guy who was not the crying type, he felt awful. And there were tears flowing. I was like, wow, you're actually super tender and you didn't mean to do that. And that was terrible. But that these things happen in the North Woods. All right, let us move on. Dan, you think are we good to move on here?
Well, I've got two quick ones for you. Brian just checked in. His brother was taking care of his tarantula when he was away in the Army and accidentally put in too many grasshoppers. And so the tarantula accidentally ate itself because it was so surrounded by grasshoppers that it just kind of started devouring everything in sight and apparently devoured itself.
A tarantula can eat itself?
Apparently so.
Wow.
So, and then a related story, but maybe a nice way to end this. So my brother was driving home from work and he noticed one of his neighbor's house on fire, right? And they had two dogs and my brother loves dogs. So he ran in and went to save the dogs, right? And he saved one dog and got it out. And then so he went back in for the second one, but by then it was too intense and he couldn't do it. So, he goes, you know, the ambulance and the fire truck comes, he gets, you know, treated for smoke inhalation, but he's fine, right? So he's coming back home, you know, hours later from the hospital and, the neighbor sees him and runs out and says, oh my God, thank you so much. We really appreciate you saving the dog. He's a member of the family. It's wonderful. And my brother goes, hey, that's no problem. You know, I have a dog too. I would have done the same thing. And I'm just really sorry I couldn't get to the second dog. And like, there was a pause, and they're like, that dog died 6 months ago.
Oh my God. that's terrible, but yet amazing that he got the one dog out. I love animals, especially dogs. Where'd you grow up, Dan?
I grew up in Jefferson Park.
Okay.
So right on the edge of the city.
I just feel like there's just a lot of integrity going on in the Shagru household out of Jefferson Park. Brother running into houses to save animals. I mean, that's big time. You don't see that around every corner.
No, you don't.
I mean, for real.
Very impressive.
What does your brother do?
My brother works for Allstate Insurance. So.
Okay. So he's making a living and helping people protect themselves.
Right.
And saving
in
dogs.
A different way now. Yeah.
Okay. That's big time. All right, let's move on here. Dan, how'd you meet your wife?
I met her at a party that friend's party they throw every year in Wisconsin.
Okay,
that turns into a pub crawl.
So the old school traditional,
yes,
in friend person of a friend, in yeah. person way. So all right, let me get into this here. This is a study from the Journal of Science Advances, and everyone's doing the dating thing online, right? The study described a, quote, hierarchy of desirability. And that got my attention. The old hierarchy of desirability. In the messaging tactics of online daters. It also found that both men and women messaged potential partners who were on average 25% more attractive than they were. Now, how do they figure that out, right? I used to do something along the lines of stand in front of the mirror with girlfriends in the past and both look in the mirror and say, who's getting the better end of the deal here? And she looked at me in utter horror. I'm like, nah, seriously, who's getting the better end? You know, what are we doing here? Who's one up? Who's one down? I was not about mutuality. Someone had to be winning the deal. A little frightening, but that's a true story. So here we go. Scientists looked at age, ethnicity, education of the users, but the main thing they did, they quantified the messages exchanged through the service. So desirability was defined by the number of messages someone received, as well as the desirability of the people sending those messages. So if you were getting a ton of messages, then by this study, they were saying that person is super desirable. They weren't like looking at some picture and be like, she's really hot and he's not, or he's super good looking. And they were just looking at it. If you're getting a ton of messages, that means you're a star. So there's an Elizabeth Birch who, was the lead author of the study, and she's a sociologist at the University of Michigan. And she says, quote, there are so many folk theories about dating, about what the rules of dating and the strategies that people have. It hit us like, oh my God, we can see if this is actually working. People in dating have all the strategies, like you don't call at 10 p.m. on a Friday night. But we don't know if that actually matters. These things are knowable. They are not just things you can speculate about with your friends. So the point here is that, well, first of all, we all, like, I think dating up is a definite thing, right? I mean, there are zillion songs out of there, like, she's out of my league, that's the kind of girl I need, Griffin House, my guy sings that one, right? There, I mean, that's how we, it's like you're chasing after something to validate yourself. Let's do an amateur psychology hour here. 312-981-7200. I'd like to hear stories of people who, you know, I'd like to know just period how you met your spouse and or girlfriend, boyfriend, period. And B, like, were you in your mind chasing? Were you thinking, oh my God, that person would never go out with me, and that's why you went after him? Like, in my younger years, I was all about the chase. Not that I'm not chasing right now too, but people love to, for lack of a better way of putting it, is get something that they don't think is attainable. Esmeralda, who chased after who in your relationship?
A mutual chasing?
Well, yeah, was it a mutual chasing? That's so beautiful.
I guess, yeah, because, I mean, neither of us, I don't think either of us was like, oh, ugh. You know, it was a mutual...
Wait, oh, ugh.
Well, you know, because I always assume a chase is because somebody's not that into it, so you got to kind of go after them.
Right. But how'd you guys meet?
Oh, we met at a comedy show.
Oh, okay. Another traditional nice way. But did you feel like he was out of your league?
Oh, God, no. That's funny.
So did you feel like were doing him a favor?
No, I didn't think I was doing him a favor, but I wouldn't say he was out of my league.
Okay. Okay. Do you think that he thought that?
I would say yes.
Really?
I don't know. I'm going to assume. He's very self-deprecating, so he probably thought, yeah.
Right.
I was out of his league.
Like, did he bring you a lot of flowers at the start?
No. I'm not a big flower person, so.
Did he bring you a lot of chicken at the start?
Yeah. Lots of fried chicken.
Well, how is your chicken these days, by the way?
It's delicious.
Yeah. Weren't you going to bring that in?
Nope.
That never happened?
No.
312-981-7200. The scientists measured the number of words per initial message as well. Like, do you think it's better if you're dating online to send a nice, like, solid, hearty response, or do you think it's better if you just are super brief? Dan, I know you. Did you read this piece? So you know the answer.
I do know the answer to this. Yes,
Esmeralda, a nice hearty thing or just like a one word? What do you think is better?
Well, most people, and when I was using those apps, I would just be like, "Hey, how's it going?" And people are like, "I need more than that." And it's like, "What?"
See,
I'm just saying hello to you. Goodness.
The study here says that the one word "hey" or "hi," like a lot of eyes, that's good enough. They don't, they're either in or they're out.
Well, yeah, I think it's, you know, if you're attracted to you see them and you go, oh, yeah, you're going to talk to them.
I like the O. I like getting an O in here.
I think if you start making excuses that you need them to entice you somehow, and it's like, well, then you're not really into them, so.
If I was trying to date up on an app, I would write, you know, War and Peace. I would try to be so funny and also prove that I had a good heart all at the same time. Should have just stuck with the hey. Hey, David, what's up? Welcome to WGN. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I went to a dating service.
Yeah?
And
it's just lunch?
I only had one response, and I was in it for about 6 months. I would be checking it every day, and I would go through the list and pick out the females and send out messages and that.
Yeah.
And I only got one response, and I married her. That was 21 years ago.
Aw. Well, you sound like a great catch, David. 21 years ago, huh?
Yeah. She said that she got about 20 offers a day to go out on dates, and so obviously I moved up.
Why did she pick you, David? What did you do right?
Well, she said she kind of felt sorry for me because I was sounding so nervous because of the voice thing that you'd call in and it would ask you questions and you'd answer a question. And she said I sound so nervous that she felt sorry for me. And she figured she'd give me a call and see how things went. And our first date was awful because she was nervous and I was nervous. And I asked her why our date was so nervous. She said, I don't know. And I said, let's go to the second one. And right now we're on our sixth date, and that was 21 years ago.
You're not taking her out too often now that you're married, David?
Well, you know, after we moved in together, you know, it's kind of like things just kind of stay together.
Netflix,
you know,
and chill?
So, yeah, we haven't been apart very often.
Well, what do you guys do for fun?
We watch movies. We still go out to dates, and we have our weekly date night, and we go out and do things.
There you go. Where was your last date night? What'd you do?
Went to Rock Hut and went fishing. I went camping.
David, that's a beautiful story. I love that you were both nervous. It sounds like the way you put it was always like she took pity on you, David. I don't think that was the case. I think that she just saw a really good-hearted David, and she was attracted to that. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's pretty true because, you know, we talked on the phone for about a month before we actually met, so we got to know each other really well. So I was able to fit into her criteria and what she was looking for, and I fit. So we went on a date, and when I say a date, and third date, we went to the zoo, and we have been apart since.
Is she the most important person in your life?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. All right. Hey, David, congratulations. Thanks for sharing.
Yep, I figured you want to hear something kind of amusing.
I absolutely did. Thank you. Well put, David. That was amusing. Very, very much so. Thanks so much.
Yep, bye.
All right, have a good night. I love the overnight. I really, really, really love the overnight. Thank you for calling, David. All right, I got to take a quick timeout. 720 WGN.
She's out of my league. And that's the kind of girl I need. I am the underdog, but I'm about to take the lead.
Now that's why Dan Shugru is just the greatest to work with. He'll pull out a Griffin House when I reference it. It's my guy Griffin House. He's coming. He's playing in like Lake Forest in October. GriffinHouseMusic.com. One of my favorites. I mean, he's doing phenomenal for himself. The guy's touring all over the place. But I feel like he should be on like a Tom Petty level in his prime, and he hasn't quite hit it. And I've done some podcasts with Griffin. He's a great guy. But that's one of his songs there. She's out of my league. That's the kind of girl I need. Okay. Couple things from this study before we move on. Some are what you would think. Older women are less desirable, while older men are more so. So the older guy has the edge on the older woman. That's not a surprise to anyone, I don't think. This is kind of not surprising either. Postgraduate education is associated with decreased desirability among women. I.e., if you're super smart, us men get intimidated by you. That's how I'm reading that one. Women's desirability peaked at the youngest age possible to joining dating app. That's 18. And declined until age 60. Men's desirability increased until 50. We actually get more attractive, dateable, likable because we're men and we don't mature until we're 90, at least in my case. And so desirability continues to go up until 50. And then they finish up. It's important to know, particularly for everyone who's not an 18-year-old woman or middle-aged white man, that the study results were based on averages, and there is a wide range in what people are looking for in a date. They just try to soften the blow there. Look, if you're an old, that doesn't, just because you're an older woman doesn't mean that there's not plenty of men that would like to date you. There absolutely are, and yes, a million other things there for if you're a young guy who's got it all together, you got a chance too. How old were you when you got married, Dan?
I was 30.
Oh, so you were like right in the sweet spot.
Right.
Yeah. Esmeralda, you going to get married over there? What do you got?
Nah.
Never?
My wife asks me all the time. She's like, Esmeralda and V going to get married? I'm like, they might end up common law, but I don't see them as the...
Yeah. I don't see the point.
So you guys, you're not... I don't want to get too personal here.
I don't see. I mean, would be such a hassle.
Really? Don't you want the ceremony and the veil and the whole thing?
Not really.
That's a $64,000 question. How about you, Mark? I know
stop deflecting.
If, you know, not saying this will happen, but if it were to progress to that point, are you guys marriage? Or are you guys just, hey, we're good where we are?
Yeah, you got to go the distance. I'm warming up to it as I about to turn 45 years old on Saturday. Which, that's another whole topic. Like, at 45...
Did you just scare yourself?
Yes, I did. At 45, like, that's, like, officially, I'm sort of, like, on the back nine. Like, average age is, what, 78, 79? Add in my...
For what?
Just life expectancy. At 45, like, I'm thinking, like I'm trying to be kind to myself. I'll make it to 90. My dad's 92. Knock on wood, I eat better than my dad. I work out more than my dad. And you would think that I would...
Go to tennis camps.
I go to tennis camps.
Talk to spiders.
Right. I mean, I got a lot going for me here. I would think, like, I would at least, like, let's just say I can make it to 90. But they, even if I make it to 90, like, I'm officially on the back nine. I mean, that's... Maybe we could kick off the 2 o'clock hour with that one. 312-981-7200. How do we handle the aging process? Do I need a break before that news? I'm sorry. Vic, we're going to be a second late, but we'll get to you. I promise. Quick time out of the news. 720 WGN. Talking a little dating here. Who's this, Dan?
This is the Fits and the Tantrums out of my league.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We were talking about dating up and dating out of your league, and the rumor on the street is that Vic Vaughn has a story that he can relate about dating up. Vic, is this true?
Yeah, I think it applies here with this conversation you're having. Jeannie and I met on Match.com.
Okay.
And I had seen her picture on the site, but I didn't contact her. I thought she was beautiful. She contacted me, and I was shocked.
Vic,
yeah.
Go
so
Vic.
I was shocked. I was shocked, but I played a little hard to get. I wanted to tell this story because we think it's funny. Her and I laugh about it now. But I initially responded with a message that I explained to her. It's very short, and I explained to her that. That she was, that I set a rule with myself when I got on this website, and she's outside my 50 mile radius max that I gave myself. She was living in Racine, Wisconsin.
Uh huh.
But it worked, I guess, because she wrote back and she kept writing back, and I kept responding. But it was all a ploy, all a plan, and it worked.
So if she wasn't, let's just get all the cards on the table here. If she wasn't super hot, you would have ruled out Racine. But since she was, you were willing to find out if there was something more there?
I probably would have went to Green Bay for her. But little did she know that, yeah.
Okay. Well, she does now, Vic. That's beautiful. How long y'all been together?
Yeah, we're going on 6 years.
Oh, my God.
It kind of worked out.
I would say so. And let's not bury the lead here. You're a very attractive man, Vic Vaughn. Look at
really?
You.
Really?
I mean, Dan, right? I mean, how good?
I mean, that beard alone.
Well,
right?
Thank you, guys. Appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, Esmeralda, is that uncomfortable for you?
No. Oh, yeah, no.
He was talking to me, Vic.
No. Let's not have Mesmer on the comment on my list.
Okay, fine. I don't, you know, I don't want to go too far.
He's a troll.
I'm just, you know,
it's a mask he wears, guys.
There you go.
He takes it off in the newsroom.
I'm the fill-in here. I don't want to make things uncomfortable for the crew that's here every night. Some people texting in on their dating lives. 773, met at my grandmother's wake. Married a year later, he chased me. 773, you should call in. I'd like to hear that story in more detail than just your text. That's fantastic. I mean, that's what happens at a wake, right? You're there to pay respects and all, but, you know, people end up having a couple drinks. Everyone's in a, you know, I'm a good person. I'm at this wake. I really care. So the hearts are open. That doesn't shock me, 773. Congratulations. Let's see here. Hi, Mark and everyone. Just asking how Arnold is after all this time. Arnold the Duck, my stuffed animal, is great. Thank you for asking. He now has two sisters in Aku, the turtle, who was purchased in Cancun, coming back from Playa del Carmen in the Cancun airport. Outstanding turtle, Aku, always friendly. And we
wait, you have a beach in Mexico named after you?
Well, I mean, Akumal is a town in Mexico where we went, Chelsea and I went swimming with the turtles.
Isn't it gorgeous there?
It's very pretty.
Yeah.
And swimming with turtles is incredibly cool. Like, you're, I mean, just beautiful, beautiful animals. And you're in there in the salt water and the whole thing. It was super cool. We had a, of course, being the novices that we are, and I'm a bad swimmer too, we had a guide with us, so we had the life jackets on, and there was a rope, and we were getting pulled around, and there's like, look down, you know, pointing, look down there, and there's, you know, turtles hanging out on the sea floor. Is that how they would say it accurately here, Dan? You with me?
Sure.
Right. That'll work. It was cool. And so we wanted to, you know, that was a special moment in the trip going to Akumal, so we named our stuffed animal turtle Aku. Great turtle. And then we were just up at Boyne Mountain, but we went to Mackinac Island, which was one of the creepier experiences that I've had. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Get Out.
Really?
Oh my God. 312-981-7200. Beautiful in theory. You take a ferry over there. But when I got to the Grand Hotel, which is on Mackinac Island, $500 a night place, and I mean, we had to pay $10 just to go in and like see the lobby,
right?
Which I did not want to do, but I was forced to do. But so, I just let's put it this way: the island lacked in diversity. I'll say it like that, and it was just creepy. They don't have motorized vehicles up there, which is cool. Like, you're on this island that, you know, you can't drive a car. That's awesome. That's, you know, unique, whatnot. But I didn't like the way they were treating the horses. Most people bike on the island, but there's also carriage rides going on. And I mean, these horses, they're foaming at the mouth and looking miserable. And it did not sit well with me. Boyne Mountain, incredible. Mackinac, I went as a kid. I didn't have the same, you know, I loved it as a kid, but I did not exactly appreciate it. How did we get over there? I have no idea what just happened. Oh, yeah. So anyway, we picked up, but because of the horses, we picked up Seabiscuit, who was our third animal purchased on Mackinac. So now we have a horse, a turtle, and a duck who all like to, you know, they're great support of the bed.
You have quite a menagerie.
Right. Are you proud of me, Esmeralda? What do you think? We got Seabiscuit, we got Aku, we got Arnold.
That's nice. Building a family.
We're building a family. The family is there. Don't forget Blanky, who's also do you keep your Blanky from childhood? Do you still have that?
My Blanky was a reusable diaper.
Oh my God.
So I think it's in a drawer somewhere at my mom's house.
You still
she
have
keeps everything.
You have a reusable diaper.
Yeah, my mom, she didn't use disposables on me.
Oh my God.
So we had a bunch of reusable diapers.
That's amazing that's still around. Your mom is a very thorough cleaner, I take it.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're all white, so you just bleach them.
Just bleach them out. Right. Okay. That's a question for the old gallery here. 312-981-7200. Do you still have your blankie from your childhood that you sleep with? Anybody out there? I would love to know. 312-981-7200. 708. Met my husband on a blind double date that I was dragged on. After saying hello, I told my friend I was going to marry him. So I guess it was less chasing than just knowing better than he did, which is still generally the case. He figured it out eventually. As far as looks go, I got the better end of the deal. He is an absurdly attractive former model. Not the reason I married him, though. I don't know if I believe you, but looks can only count for a little bit. I get it. 773, who texted in earlier, who met at the grandmother's wake, says she's been married for 48 years. You go, 773. Congratulations. That's awesome. You want me to take a break then? Okay.
We have an interesting story from Elizabeth. We'll get to after the break.
Okay. Elizabeth, hang in there. We'll talk to you in 2 minutes on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Having a conversation here on 720 WGN that includes dating and my stuffed animals. And everything else here. Insulted the new employee from the 630 on the text line, 312-981-7200. From the 630, insulted the new employee terribly about her weight. My attempts to apologize worked. Going on 21 years, Jerry in Aurora. Way to go, Jerry. Sounds like, so you made fun of somebody for their weight and you ended up marrying them. That is probably not a story that's been duplicated a million times. Let me, as promised here, Elizabeth apparently has a great story about how she met. Somehow, so I'm getting feedback here. Elizabeth?
Yes? Hi.
Good morning. Where are you calling from, Elizabeth?
Riverside. I lived here 62 years.
Okay. Let's hear your story.
I was living in the little village, and I had dated someone, and he jilted me after four and a half years, married somebody else, and I was going to a White Sox game with a girlfriend, and this car stops, and it was a local butcher delivering stuff, and she knew him, and he asked me for my telephone number. I said, sure, okay, what the hell, right? So he came, hair parted in the middle, which I hate, red bow tie, which I just, and an orchid, which means hell. I had a Latin teacher who, you know.
You didn't like the hair part?
No, I did not like hair. And he had a big head of hair, too. I thought, this is going to be some date. Well, you know where he took me? The Edgewater Beach Hotel.
Ooh. First date to the hotel, huh?
No. They had a dance floor on the sand. It was the place to go. This was back in the early 50s. So I thought, oh, well, I'm going to be honest with this guy. I said, listen, I'm not a virgin. I was jilted. He got married. And in his pocket, he pulls out his hand and shows me an engagement ring. He says she gave it back to me.
Wait, and what?
He said she gave it back to me. His intended was didn't want to marry him anymore. And he looked at me and he says, you know what? So we were destined for each other. He says, we'll know how to make it work. And we did for 62 years.
Wait a second here. On your first date, he whipped out a ring?
He did, because I had told him, you know, at that time, you were supposed to be a virgin when you were going out, unless you married the guy.
I don't know if that's true.
Well, back in the early 50s.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Listen, when I went to was teaching school, if you were 5 months pregnant, you had to stay home, and you had to stay home with that baby until it was at least 2 years old, believe it or not.
Yeah, but I think people back in that era got a little more frisky than you guys acknowledge.
Well, anyway, after our third child was 2 months old, and the other two were 2.5 and 5, his pituitary gland had been moved over, and he was suffering seizures. And we thought it was a brain tumor, but it was a malformation in his brain. And so I took care of him for 50 years. I told him he couldn't die on me. He had helped me raise soul. He was wonderful.
Aw. That's beautiful.
Thank you. There's always somebody out there for you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Elizabeth. Thanks for sharing.
Good luck.
Thank you. I feel like I just got left out on the pier by myself. Good luck. That was a nice story. I don't know. Were they hearing the reverb, or was that just me hearing it?
We're having problems with line one, so that's happened a few times.
That's the way it goes. New studio. By the way, how are you guys enjoying the new dig?
You know, it's nice. You know, it's weird having modern day equipment, you know, after working in the tower for so long. So, but, you know.
Esmeralda, you liking the new scene here, or you don't worry, management's not listening. What do you got?
I don't really, you know, there's a microphone, and I got a computer, and I'm good.
Right. You can do your job, bottom line.
Right.
People are texting here, Esmeralda, wondering if you're going to get married.
No.
Ask Esme if her boyfriend asked her to marry him, what would she say no?
I'd say no. He feels the same way, so.
Okay. So you guys
it's
are
a mutual. It's yeah.
You're a match made in heaven.
Thanks.
312-981-7200. 630, I lied and told my future that, I don't know if this, I gotta read that through in the break here. It's a little, not sure where you're going there, Jerry and Aurora.
Although that last call, I was telling Vic how crazy people used to meet. I mean, I'm sure people have stories like that, but her car breaks down, she's going to a baseball game. What'd she say, the butcher?
Yeah, it was hard to follow the whole thing.
Her girlfriend knew, yeah. And it's like, what? He helps us, and then he asks for my number. It's like it's always these like very crazy stories, which I just think nowadays.
Well, 708, we met when our cars were next to each other at a red light in 1974. We got married in 79, 40
what?
Years next June. Four kids, five grandkids.
I just feel like people aren't as brazen, I guess, or more outgoing to look over and be like, "Hey, lady, can I get your number?"
My grandma and grandpa met. When they were both on a dance floor, my grandma's ring fell off her finger. My grandpa put it back on and said, "With this ring, I thee wed."
Are you kidding me?
No.
Jeez.
That's how my grandparents met.
And then your grandma just turned into a puddle.
Yeah.
And went, oh my gosh.
And eight kids and ex.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, 33 grandkids later.
Yeah. My parents met. They met at the Aragon.
33 grandkids?
That's crazy.
Your folks met at the Aragon? There's a lot going on right now.
Yeah. They met at the Aragon.
We got a break. So. I want to hear the story of Esmeralda's parents.
At the Aragon.
Yeah.
That's amazing. All
we'll
right.
take bets on what the concert was.
They were at an Alkaline Trio concert. They're in the mosh pit. Their eyes met. No.
That's okay. We're going to get the story here for real. It's coming up after 2:30. And Sam Silverstein. We're going to learn about accountability. We're going to learn about how to be better. That's in the 3 o'clock hour, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, good morning. 2:35, Mark Carmen in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Also in for Brian Noonan, who's starring in something somewhere on the TV landscape. Great to be with you. 312-981-7200. We've been talking about dating and marriages, and Esmeralda's parents met at the Aragon. Their eyes met in a mosh pit. Is that right?
Yeah. So they used to have dances there all the time.
Aww.
And that's how my parents met. My mom got dragged over there by a friend of hers, and then her friend left with some other dude and left my mom stranded, and then my dad offered to give her a ride.
Aww.
And then they started meeting. And then it took a few years, because then my mom went back to Mexico, and then she came back, and he was still, like, he'd call her all the time, and
that's love right there. Waiting.
Yeah, he was very persistent.
Go, Dad. Is that why you respect him so much, his persistency?
Yeah. And I was telling Dan, I have, there's a picture of them when they first met, that night.
Aw.
Because there's always, like, photographers. They actually still, if you go to Logan Square, there's people doing it. They still take Polaroids of you.
See, this is
so I have a shot of them that first night.
See, this is where I think, like, back in the day it was better. there's something about the way we connect now with, I don't know, social media, dating apps. There's just the organicness of an Esmeralda's parents meeting at the Aragon and a ride home. That just seems a lot more beautiful.
Although I'm thinking, like, why are you taking rides from strangers?
Because she saw something that she liked, mm-hmm. Esmeralda.
It's like, that's a stranger. She would have yelled at me if I had done that.
And Dan's grandparents, what happened? They were, a ring fell in a...
They were on a dance floor, and my grandma's ring fell off, and he put it back on her and said, with this ring, I thee wed.
That's just amazing. And there they go.
Yep.
And now look at you, Dan.
Yep.
My parents met in... Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. That's where I'm trying to say. Little summer getaway. Next thing you know, good old Fred and Gladys. Things maybe, perhaps, got advanced a little quicker than they expected, but these things happen. And then a mistake like myself came out 25, 40 years later. I was late in the game in the old Carmen family. All right, 312-981-7200. We'll move on from the dating to... this was a story that Dan sent me today. I've actually never been there. It was first reported by the Eater. Murphy's Red Hots, 1211 West Belmont Avenue. It's been a Lakeview fixture for decades, and it's going to close in 10 days. I don't know if this is like Hot Dogs level. When Hot Dogs went out on California, like, that was a big deal. And now, of course, Hot Dogs lurking around, and they have a, you can get it at Wrigley Field and whatnot. But it spawned into the topic, 312-981-7200. Like, what, as far as things being better back in the day, like, what restaurants do you miss the most? What, and you could even go into, like for me, it would be like, I would name Chicago Stadium was the greatest place ever, and I spent a good portion of my sports childhood there, and if I could bring anything back in the city, it would be Chicago Stadium. I don't need the beautiful concourse to the United Center. Give me the smell of urine and beer and the first balcony and the second balcony and running upstairs. Don't need an escalator. Give me a tight seat. And by the way, RIP to Stan Mikita, one of the all-time, well, that's not even doing him justice, but one of the all-time great Chicago Blackhawks, one of the all-time great people, and so many tributes coming out that have been so beautiful for Stan and his family. So I just want to throw my heartfelt condolences there to one of Chicago's finest people to ever do it on the ice or on the court or on the field. Stan's he's right up there with all of them. So and that just makes me think of Chicago Stadium. But Murphy's, I put out my list here. I created a list, Dan. It was a big moment in my day.
Nice.
Of places that I miss. 312-981-7200. Does anybody remember the Golden Ox? The Golden Ox was on North and Clybourne. It was a German place. You could go in there on Friday night. They had a huge buffet. You could eat 7,000 oysters if you wanted to. They had the chopped liver on the table. They had the waitresses wore lederhosen. It was an incredible place, but long gone. Carson's is still around, but Carson's on Wells, the original, just went out. Like, I went to that as a kid. Getting to go to Carson's was the biggest deal. We're going to Carson's. That au gratin potatoes in that particular place, like, you would wait. They had the Ms. Pac-Man on the tabletop thing. That was like, I mean, I would rather have gone to Carson's than like a trip to Hawaii. That was like super exciting stuff. And then growing up, I had Shelton's, which I don't know if people remember Shelton's. This is in Ravinia. This is north suburb type of stuff. But Shelton's was a hamburger place that you could get hamburger special, cheeseburger special. The fries were amazing. And kids from like K through 5, we would line up on the corner, and the light would turn green, the crossing guard would let you go, and it was a dead sprint to get to Sheldon's to get a table. And poor Shirley, the waitress there, would be, I mean, you know, it was lunchtime. You didn't have a ton of time. Kids coming in, we're all hungry, we're all screaming, cheeseburger special, cherry Coke, whatever it was. And somehow, some way, all that food would get served in a half an hour, and then like we were kids, we'd tip her like a dime. It was terrible. I feel bad to the day, but Sheldon's was like, that place was amazing. It was in Risky Business. A little scene there with Tom Cruise and company as they were trying to plot where to go in life. So those were some of mine. Also, to tie in with 8888 and the Cubs, Yum Yum Donuts was, I didn't go for the donuts, but I would always go for the, as a kid, I would get like four hot dogs there. You could, you know, put them in a bag, bring them in, and then it's a nine-inning baseball game. Okay, so, I mean, maybe two out of the gate, another one in the fourth, another one in the sixth. They were like, you know, maybe a dollar, I want to say. In the park was, you know, $2.50 at that point. Now they're six.
Seven dollars. We were there this weekend, yeah, seven.
Did you buy one?
I bought two.
You bought two dogs?
Oh, yeah.
For yourself?
Yes. I didn't have lunch, so. But
I mean, it's just painful. $14.
Yeah, but.
But it was worth it.
It was worth it. You know, it's Wrigley Field. I mean, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? I'm gonna eat these two dogs. That's crazy. But Yum Yum Donuts. I don't know. 312-981-7200. Anything stick out for you, Dan?
I will go college. The bar where I had my first legal drink. The bar that served pizza on free pizza every Tuesday, $2 Coronas. Gorman's Pub, which was right across the street from Bradley University. It's just no longer there. But like any time I would go back down to Peoria when it was still there, that was one of the places I always insisted on going back to, just because it was just so chock full of memories and all the things that I did and all the various, you know, escapades and things like that. So.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good job. Well done. That makes me think of Pearson's in Iowa City, which was an old school drugstore. And in the back, they had maybe six or seven stools, tuna salad, egg salad, chocolate shake, turkey sandwich, just the pure basics, white bread, wheat bread. That was a great one. Esmeralda, what do you got? What do you miss?
There was this place, and I don't really remember the food, but I remember every time we went there, it was called Secrets in Joliet. And it was, I guess it was like a bistro type place, but I would always get a kitty cocktail.
Why were you hanging out in Joliet?
Because that's where I'm from.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, that's where I grew up.
WJOL, did you ever work there?
No.
Okay.
I did not. No.
Well, how would you describe the experience of growing up in Joliet?
It's terrible. I didn't like it. It's not like other places. Like, my boyfriend's from Arlington Heights, and he, you know, he was able to ride his bike everywhere, and he could get out into the city of Arlington Heights and walk places. You can't do that. I lived in a subdivision. You were pretty much stuck. There was corn all around us. The sidewalk stopped at a certain point. It's gotten better, but
you couldn't ride a bike in Joliet?
You could ride it in the subdivision, but after that, you'd have to be riding on the road, and people aren't used to, you know,
okay,
especially if you're a kid. They kind of just, the sidewalks would just stop.
Okay, so you were like on a single lane highway riding a bike, not a good idea.
Yeah, it was a lot of that, at least where I lived. I lived by the highway, too. I lived by I-80, so, and there's cornfields. Now there's a lot more development.
I don't think
where I lived, or where my parents are.
I don't think anyone's ever said something nice about Joliet.
It's not great.
I mean,
casinos, prisons. It's not that enticing.
One of my good friends, he's a basketball coach out there at St. Francis University. Do you know St. Francis? Are you familiar?
I know of it, yeah.
Yeah, okay. He seems to like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an okay town. You're close to the city.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. Things you missed that are long gone. 773. I'm still getting over 7-Eleven buying out White Hen. Whoever thinks 7-Eleven was better than White Hen should be shot. Okay.
Yes. I miss White Hen. You could get sandwiches. They had a deli. At any point in time, someone would make you a sandwich.
So I'm a huge fan of White Hen. White Hen had great milk. Even the White Hen milk was a winner.
Ooh, and they had Icy's with the polar bear.
They had the salad hot dog at the White Hen. White Hen was a winner. I don't know about killing people who like 7-Eleven more than White Hen, but that's White Hen had it going on. What happened to White Hen? Why did the White Hen fail? Sounds like somebody might have been stealing. Let's see. Restaurants I miss from the 708. I don't miss any restaurants that have closed or closed in the future. There are always more to savor. Okay, from Tom and Steery. Yes, of course. There's a lot. I like the way you're looking forward in your life, Tom. But we also have to appreciate just an institution like Murphy's. Although, I don't know. Is Murphy's really an institution? Are we going too far here? Do they deserve an article in the paper?
I mean, it's not a long one.
But it's in the paper.
It is in the paper. That's true.
I mean, I think it's an old school hot dog place.
I mean, such a hot dog town, I think.
Yeah. I think that's more of what it is rather than they probably... I mean, their hot dogs are probably fine.
I mean, I feel like Gene and Jude's deserve something in the paper.
Yeah, but are they gone?
No.
Well, there you go.
Not yet.
They're still kicking.
But like, what? Well, like top five hot dog places that are like sort of mom and pop, like Portillo's, you're out. You've gone way too global. Love it. I'd kill for an Italian beef right now, hot and sweet. But I don't like that. Wouldn't qualify. Like small, south, like for me, Colonel Mustard's Last Stand, Northwestern University, place is phenomenal. 630. Hi, Dan. I'm assuming that's talking to Dan Shagru.
I'm out of the text when Nick is in. So.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah. I see what's going on. Mrs. Ponderosa met my wife there. She was divorced. She had five kids. Married in 6 months. It's in our 41st year from Streamwood Steve. That's amazing, Streamwood Steve. That's incredible.
Ponderosa.
Well,
did you
yes.
ever go there?
A, the fact that he likes Ponderosa. B, the fact that he's got 41 years going and he took on five kids. That's big time. And I don't
think I ever went to a Ponderosa.
I don't think I ever went
to... like a Sizzler.
Sizzler.
Bennigan's, that kind of deal.
Bennigan's. I always thought Bennigan's was overrated. But people loved Bennigan's. Chili's.
Chili's is still around.
In that particular realm. Let's see here.
You know what was good, and I'm sad, and Nick was friends with the guy who owned Wiener and Still Champion.
Yeah,
up in Evanston. I enjoyed that place.
Never went to Wiener and Still Champion.
Deep fried bacon.
Yep. Deep fried everything.
Mm-hmm.
Deep fried gyro meat.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Corn dogs are super tasty.
That is super aggressive. All right. Well, Murphy's, we got you in here. We gave you love. Phil Vitale wrote it up in the Tribune. I think I got to try it. I mean, the picture looks great. But I eat so many hot dogs.
Do you like oysters?
I do like oysters.
Across the street is Fulstrom's.
Oh, okay.
They do a dollar oyster pretty much every day. Or just Monday through Friday until like 5. And they're nice, big old oysters.
So you're saying go have a dog, have an oyster, live a dream.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad, Esmeralda. I like it. All right. I got till the 18th. It's coming quick here. Murphy's is going down. All right. We love you, Murphy's. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Welcome to the overnight. Mark Harmon sitting in for Nick DiGilio tonight. And this is a conversation I've been looking forward to having. I'm being joined right now by Sam Silverstein, who is an accountability expert. And as I'm on my own growth path here, sometimes I look at myself in the mirror and say, you know, you could do X, Y, Z better, and somehow, some way, I'm getting in my own way. And I also see places in my life where, you know, people that I either A, work with, or B, partner with in relation, where I feel like we could be better supporting each other. I'm sure that there are plenty of people that can relate to this. Sam, first of all, thank you for taking time. We appreciate you jumping on WGN.
Hey, Mark, it's my pleasure to be with you tonight, and I'm really looking forward to talking about accountability and how we can leverage that to be not a negative, but actually a positive and make it our competitive advantage.
Absolutely. Let's get some edge right here. I mean, we're up in the middle of the night for something, and you're a leadership speaker and accountability expert. Your website is samsilverstein.com, and I was checking out your site today, Sam. There's some great videos on there that are inspiring. Let's just start at the very top of accountability. Like, what do you think if somebody says to you, "Hey Sam, what does being like accountable to myself in the highest level look like?" I mean, how would you ask them? How would you dive into that conversation?
Well, you know, over the years, I think we've been taught some rhetoric, and I don't know that I agree with most of it, but we've been taught that accountability is punitive, and it's like if you make a mistake, you're supposed to stand up and say it was my fault and it won't happen again. And I don't see that as, that's not accountability. That's being honest and that's being responsible. And there's a difference between responsibility and accountability, but yet in society and the use of our English language these days, we seem to interchange the word responsibility and accountability a lot, and they're different. And so, first of all, I'd lay it down. You're responsible for things, but you're accountable to people. That report's not going to hold you accountable. But, Mark, you'll hold me accountable. And as I like to say, as a leader in a leadership situation, a true leader doesn't hold people accountable. A true leader helps people be accountable. And so that's one side of it. What you're asking about is the individual side and the accountability to ourselves. And again, that to me is based on a set of values. And so your accountability is going to have to connect to a set of values that say how you live your life. And so the minutiae of getting something done, I mean, I struggle to get everything on my to-do list checked off, and I think most people struggle to do that. But I think accountability is much deeper than just checking off things on your to-do list.
So the guy that is trying to get his stuff together, if you will, and then for the seventh day in a row, he's 15 minutes late for work, and everyone at his work is an on time, type A workplace where everybody's ready to go at 7 a.m. and he's thinking to himself, man, why can't I get here? You don't exactly see that as accountability. That's more like you're lacking in being responsible. Period. You haven't even touched the next level. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, right. That's exactly right. Now there's two things going on. There's your interaction with your peers, the people that you work with, your boss, the people that report to you. There's that situation, and then there's the conversation with yourself in what you just described. And so, with regards to the people around you, quite frankly, accountability in an organization, let's work backwards. In an organization, accountability is something that's inspired in the culture. It's not mandated. If I report to you, you can't come into my office and say, gosh darn it, Sam, you better be accountable. I'm going to hold you accountable. Because once you start doing that, first of all, that's only going to work for a couple hours. If I don't want to be accountable, I'm not going to be accountable. And the reality is, if I'm not doing my job, if I'm not being responsible for those things that I'm supposed to do, why have you let me stay in the organization? You should have allowed me to go someplace where my behavior is appreciated a long time ago. And so I truly believe that a lot of organizations, they just let people hang out there too long, and they don't get rid of the people that aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. And if showing up at 7 o'clock is important, and that's critical because, the team starts at 7 and you can't do your work without me and vice versa, and that's the way it's supposed to be, then doggone it, if I'm not showing up, why do you let me do that? That means now what's happened is the culture of the organization has become a culture by default. Anything goes. It's not a culture by design. The leadership has lost control of the situation. One of the things that accountability is built on is, accountability is keeping your commitments to people. We have commitments to ourselves, but in an organization, it's between me and you. It's between the people I report to and the people that report to me. Those commitments aren't, I'll be there at 10, I'll have the report done. I mean, that's the stuff you're just supposed to do, period. The commitments go much deeper. One of the commitments, to give you an example, is a commitment to the values. So you talked about individual accountability versus organizational accountability. And a commitment to the values for the individual, it's me committing to the values that I say that I'm going to live my life by. And so, am I living those values or not? And if I'm not living the values, then I'm not being accountable. And the fact that I'm not showing up at 7 o'clock is a minor issue. And so there's specific areas that values should attach to. But I'll give you an example. In my life, I've identified three critical values for me. They're integrity, respect, and significance. And I've defined them in depth. So, for instance, I define integrity is that I make decisions based on the belief that my word is my bond, and doing what is right is always the right thing to do. And I commit to do this no matter what. That's integrity to me. And so if I'm supposed to be there at 9 and I'm not there at 9, you know, I don't know that integrity is showing up in my life. Or respect. If I'm not showing up at 9 and you depend upon me, you know, I define respect as I see all people as equal. I value other people's opinions, appreciate their beliefs, and recognize the importance of their priorities. If I'm not respecting you, then I'm not living my values, and then I lack the accountability to myself to live those values. And so it's deeper than just the minutia of the things. And that's where I take the conversation, because when we understand what the depth of it is, then what happens is we're truly able to get a handle on it at that point. What do you value? What's important to you? Is it showing up in your life? Because if it's not showing up in your life, I might say you don't really value it.
Right.
You might want to value it. You know, you might think it's nice. But if it's not showing up, you can't tell me it's a value. And once you have identified those values and you're living those values, that's when you're moving to accountability.
So there's a lot there. Sam Silverstein.
I know.
I want to talk about the guy that is supremely talented and very smart and super creative, but he's bad at the minutia that he would call it, or she would call it, which I started with, the showing up, the day-to-day, going through emails, responding to people. Like, great at the big idea, can put together a phenomenal package that a business might buy, you know, they can really sell, but the actual day-to-day, which what like I would put it in a sports term, like the person who goes out there and is constantly just refining his task, like it's just making the layup every day and just getting his form down, if it's a baseball player or whatever, golf, doesn't matter, but can do the big stuff, but is terrible at the little stuff, and then basically impales himself in the process because he's not doing the little things. You understand where
right,
I'm going here,
right.
Sam? Like, he's got
exactly. Exactly. So back it up. I know you're a big baseball fan. You know, you use the baseball analogy. Let's go there for a moment. Spring training this year. I was watching and on one of the teams, and they had this phenomenal young pitcher. I mean, this guy's throwing 100+ miles per hour and he's able to control it. And very early in spring training, they sent him down. They cut him out of the major league camp. And I'm like, what is going on? There's not too many pitchers that have this guy's stuff. And it turns out that what happened was he was showing up late. It's spring training, and you're supposed to show up at a certain time to do whatever it is you're supposed to do, whether it's to do your individual stretching, physical fitness, before the team goes into team drills. You know the routine. There's a whole day's worth of activity. He's showing up late. They said, hey, that's not how we do it here. And so they sent him down, and he cost himself the opportunity, potentially at that point, of making that major league team. And so doing what you're supposed to do is that's the price of admission. There's a million people out there with great ideas. There's a million people out there that can do any job. There's, you and I don't have a corner on expertise or brilliance or whatever. But the reality is, if we're not willing to treat people right, if we're not going to answer our calls on a timely basis, if we're not going to return our emails, then we're not going to succeed in this world. And so that's not really what accountability is. That's just your basic responsibility. If you're not going to do that, go be a hermit on the beach somewhere.
Well, okay, let's talk about a company that has this super talented guy, but yet he's not doing the minutia, or she's not doing the minutia, right? Some people are afraid of confrontation, Sam. They don't want to confront. They'd rather sit in their office and hope that it miraculously gets better. I mean, how do you coach a guy? Like, I feel like the leader in that organization, for him to be actually truly accountable to himself and the organization, you have to build the muscle of, I am going to step in and tell said individual, you have one more shot at this, or maybe they don't at all, and I'm moving on. Like, some people just don't have that.
Okay.
You hear what I'm saying?
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I think you nailed the situation. And this is what happens over and over and over and over in organizations. I mean, I don't know if you've ever fired anybody or not, but I work with leadership groups. I work with teams in organizations literally around the world. And no matter who the organization is, I'll say, just out of curiosity, how many of you fired somebody? Well, everyone's hand goes up usually in a group that I'm in, or half the people in the room, if there's some frontline people in there also, which is cool. And so these hands go up, and I go, okay, let me ask you, after you fired it, how many of you had someone come up to you and say something right afterwards? And the hands are still up. I said, what did they say? And in unison, the room cries out, what took you so long?
Right.
But see, the bottom line is, if I'm negative, if I'm not fun to be around, if I'm not doing my job, I'm pulling you down. You're sitting in the desk next to me. I'm not doing you any favors. I'm pulling you down. I'm pulling the culture down. And if the leader allows me to exist in that space, then what happens is the leader is allowing the culture to go south. And the organizational culture is the only thing that separates you from your competition. Because look, we're on WGN right now. You guys are a market leader. There's no two ways about it. But you know, right down the road, there's KMOX out of St. Louis. It's also 50,000 clear watt station. There's WSB out of Atlanta, 50,000 clear watt station. You have competition in the Chicago markets as well. And so a radio station's a radio station. What makes you different? Well, your culture makes you different, because your culture is going to say, if it's defined in your values, you're going to tell me four things. You're going to say how the relationships are internal in the organization and how they are externally in the organization. You're going to tell me what your foundational values are, which tells me what the character of the organization is. You're going to tell me what the professional values are, which is what type of work effort is expected here, and you're going to give me your community values, which is going to tell me how are we committed to and how do we support the community that we work in. Now, once you have those values, the question is the leader going to live those values, model those values, teach the values, and make sure that everyone else is doing the same? And that's what you just described. If someone wasn't living a value, and is the leader going to just avoid the confrontation? Or are they going to do something about it? I was in Dallas a couple of years ago, and I was working with a group of people, and I said, okay, your number one salesperson is disrespecting two people on their support staff. What do you do? And the guy in the front row, he goes, and these are all presidents of various companies, he says, oh, I move him to the corner office. That way he doesn't have to interface with so many people. And he thought he was solving the problem. And all he was really doing is saying that, hey, if you produce enough business, it doesn't matter how you act.
Right.
And so our code of ethics, our standards, our morality, none of that matters if you can generate business. And so he's got it all wrong. You know, I wrote a book. I've got a book, one of my books called Non-Negotiables, about a bank, Happy State Bank out of Amarillo, Texas. And that's the real name of a bank. And it's a bank that went in 1990 from one location and 10 million in assets to today. They have over 35 locations and over 3.4 billion in assets. And the CEO of the organization, J. Pat Hickman, he's got a set of values in that organization that they live no matter what. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're the vice president or whether you're a teller. If you don't live the values, you can't stay there, period. And so what happens is you get rid of those people that aren't living the values, and you will reward the people that are living the values. And you create this place where there's a harmony, where people love to come to work, where they want to help each other, where they support each other. and where they want to be accountable. That's getting at the core of accountability.
Sam, let's take a real quick timeout. I want to ask you about how we lie to ourselves coming back here. Real quick, Sam Silverstein, accountability and leadership speaker / expert. You can check out his website and you can contact him. SamSilverstein.com at 720 WGN. Back on 720 WGN, continuing our conversation with Sam Silverstein, who is an accountability expert. Sam, let me just talk about myself for a second here. I was a guy that always thought I was special as a kid and didn't have great study habits and watched a ton of Michael Jordan and was great at getting around things. And as I've gotten older, right, I would say that I want to be accountable. I want to be the guy that's always there on time. But I also, like, I'm constantly fighting the battle of, well, it's okay. I did great here, so I don't have to necessarily do as great there. I could show up late. I can take a little bit of a long lunch. And so it's like I'm lying to myself. Like, it's part of me feels like I want to give my – I'm working on not giving myself passes. So we're talking about, like, great – great accountability in an organization. How would you deal just with an individual who comes to you and just spews what I just said? Which it's embarrassing for me to say, but that's if I'm being honest, a lot of the time, or at least historically, like that's where I'm at.
Yeah, you know, it's like I have trouble with some of the minutiae. I'm a big idea person. That's what I do, and I'm not going to be the guy that's going to execute it, and so. There have to be other people that execute it, and I know that. That's the way that I work. But that doesn't mean that I don't do my job or I don't fulfill my responsibility or that I'm not reliable. It's just that I know where my strengths are, and so I apply myself where my strengths are. However, there has to be a work ethic. There has to be a standard. There has to be – you have to know what it is that you believe about who you are and what you want to be and what you want to accomplish. And so those beliefs that you have, when you don't really know what you believe about what's right in life, what you believe about how you should work, when you don't know that, then you're like standing on shifting sand rather than on a concrete foundation.
Yep.
And so as an individual, and that's the key. And you know what? That's not that unusual with someone that's younger versus someone that's been around a little bit more. I think we all need time to find our way, to have some experiences. And truthfully, you know, sometimes we do something maybe we shouldn't. And in that moment, we discover what doesn't work. And it helps to zero in on what does work. But here's what I would suggest. You know, if in that scenario you and I were working together and I was an executive coach to you in that situation, you know, I'd say, Mark, okay, let's sit down and let's spend some time discovering what your values are based on what you believe. And let's look at those values. And I would want to look at those values in four areas. And they're very similar to a business, but it's only on a personal level. I want to know what your foundational values are, which talk to your character as a person. I want to know what your professional values are, which tells me what type of, how you want to perform professionally. I want to know what your relational values are, which is how you, what you believe you, in the way you should be relating to people. And I want to know what your community values are. I want to know how you participate in the community, how you make a difference in this world that we live in, because I believe that's just as important. And in spending time and talking about those four areas, what's going to happen is, you know, in this scenario that you played out, is you're going to come to a realization that, you know what, professionally, this is what I want to be. This is what I want to accomplish. And this is how I want to handle myself. And this is what I want to be known for. And this is the legacy that I want to leave. A real leader, you know, only has impact and influence. That's it. And the only thing that's left when the leader's gone is their legacy. And you do that through your values. And so I would want to spend time figuring out what those values are, because then really all you have to do is go live those values. And if you really spend the time and you dig into your heart and you come up with the values, foundational values, relational values, professional values, and community values, you're going to create a blueprint of how to live your life. And accountability is never going to be a problem. Now, that doesn't mean that you're good at everything, and it doesn't mean that, that you're going to like the details. That doesn't mean that, but you know that you're smart enough to know that we have to do what we have to do until we get to do what we want to do. And so if we're living those values, then we're being accountable to ourselves. And in being accountable to ourselves, we're certainly positioning ourselves to be accountable to others around us. And that's what we want, and that's what creates a more accountable world. That's my mission, to help build a more accountable world. We start with individuals. We look at organizations. We work with communities. That's how it's done.
Sam Silverstein, accountability and leadership speaker / expert. Sam, let's take a real quick timeout at 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Mark Harmon sitting in for Nick DiGilio. Continuing our conversation with Sam Silverstein, who is an accountability expert. SamSilverstein.com. What would you say to the person who is great, perhaps, at coaching others and seeing other people's flaws and gaps and how to help them fill it in, but they're not great at perhaps at doing it for themselves? They could say, you should do this, but then they don't live by the same thing. That's just not a good leader at the end of the day. But what do you tell that person?
Yeah, because you can't, you know, the old parenting, you know, we've all heard this, do as I say, not as I do. Well, you can't do that as a leader. That doesn't work, because the leader sets the pace. The leader sets the standard. The leader has higher expectations set on them. But what you're describing about is someone that needs a coach. You know, you said they're good at coaching. We all need a coach.
Yep.
We all need a coach, and that's the key. And so when you engage someone to coach you, you know, I have a very dear friend, and we talk to each other on a regular basis, and we know that everything's on the table for discussion, and we help each other in a very sincere and very honest way. And I've hired professional coaches that I work with. Athletes work with coaches. Performers work with coaches. We need to work with coaches too. And so I don't see all my faults. My wife sees a few of them. I don't know that she's always right, but maybe she is, you know? And so, yeah, we need to put ourselves in a position, and we need to be open to coaching and feedback. And it's okay if we don't see it, as long as we're willing to allow someone else to see it and we listen to them.
Speaking, I don't have the wife, I have the girlfriend, and I told her that you were coming on tonight, and I asked her if you want any questions asked. She wrote to me, what systems do you recommend implementing when starting a personal accountability system? Do you jive with that question?
Okay, so again, I want to move a little bit. Here's the deal. Yeah. It's a great question. I'm gonna go back to what I talked about around values. I don't think it's systems.
Yeah.
You know, a to-do list. Which app do you have on your phone that's your to-do list? Are you using Things or Getting Stuff Done or you know, that's a to-do list. It's not accountability.
Yeah.
Accountability is not a way of doing. Accountability is a way of thinking. And specifically, it's how we think about people. And so society sees and thinks about tactical accountability, and I'm more focused on relational accountability, because when the relationships are in place, I'm not going to want to let you down. It's like, you know, you asked me if I would come on your show tonight. Well, I don't want to let you down. And so the deeper the relationship, the more likely that someone's not going to let you down. So build those relationships. Build deep, meaningful relationships at business, in your personal life, in the community. Those are going to pay rewards. And what you're going to discover is you're not going to want to let those people down. And when you don't let them down, they're not going to want to let you down. And then the second thing is, like I said, have those values. And then review those values every morning, and then think about during the day, how are the values showing up? And if they're not, then you need to stop and evaluate the decisions that you're making and get back on track. Or mark the value off. Don't tell me it's a value if you're not living it, because otherwise you're just lying.
Yep. So You've got a bunch of books out here, Sam. Non-negotiable, No Matter What, The Lost Commandments, No More Excuses, The Success Model, Making Accountable Decisions. What are you, if for somebody who's just checking you out for the first time and they wanted to order a book from you, which one would you recommend?
Wow, that's like saying, which one of my children are my favorite? It's a great question. And I would say that the two books that I would look at right away would be, if I had to nail it down, Non-Negotiable, which is about Happy State Bank and the CEO, who is an amazing leader, and the accountability there is off the charts. That's a great book. My number one seller is No More Excuses, and there's a lot of great ideas in there. It tends to be a little bit more on the tactical side, whereas Non-Negotiable tends to be more about the relational side, and so the two together play really well. So either one of those, you can't go wrong.
That's all right. I got some work to do here, Sam. I appreciate.
Well, hey, you're on the right track. See, you've said, you know what? I want to be better, and that's what it's about. First, is making a determination. You know what? I can be better, and that's where I want to be every day of my life. I want to wake up and say I can be better. And so, you know, you've mentioned the website a bunch of times. There's a free newsletter, a lot of free videos, and a lot of free resources that you know, I love putting it out there, because our mission is to make a more accountable world, and we can't do that without providing the tools to do it with.
Let's wrap up with this one final question. The biggest issue that you see when you go and speak with corporations and people who say, hey, Sam, will you come help me? What's the biggest thing that you're constantly tackling?
We frequently get calls from leaders that say, will you come in and tell my people to be accountable? And I kind of go, oh, you know, I'm not an accountability hitman. And so the problem is that the leader sees accountability as a way of doing. And the reality is accountability is a way of thinking. And it starts with the leader and how they think about their people. And the clients of mine that understand that it starts with how they think about their people, they eat this up, because it just helps them get better and better and better. And so when you start seeing that people have value, when you start seeing that people are not the problems, but they are the solutions, and when you start building meaningful relationships with people, you're going to see accountability go through the roof.
We're getting to the core. We're looking for, I would almost define that as, you're looking for some purpose. Like, what are you about? And living towards that. I think that, I don't know, I'm sure.
And then be that.
Yeah.
Yes, and then be that. Don't back off of it. And don't back off of it in your company. As a leader, you have the right to say, this is who we are, and we're not going to accept anything less, no matter how you produce.
You could see that in a corporation. You can see that on a sports team. You get super talented people, and they get passes, and then you're saying that's like a cancer that's floating out through the whole team or the whole organization. You can't have it. It's not even worth the talent if they're not going to live by your model, live by how you want your place of business or wherever to be. That's really cool, Sam. I like it. I'm on board.
Well, all right. Well, I'm glad.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking time, and congratulations, Sam. Word on the street is you're about to become a granddad.
Yep, my oldest. Well, I do have my son has a little 22-month-old.
Okay.
And my oldest daughter is about to deliver, and we're in D.C. right now. Actually, literally, she's in the hospital. We came to get a few hours sleep, and then we're going to go back, and we should have a baby by sunrise.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome. Sam, great to talk to you. Continued success to you, and we appreciate you being on WGN.
My pleasure, Mark. Anytime.
720 WGN. Good morning. 350. Mark Harmon back with you. Do we learn anything, Dan? Are we more accountable? Do we have a purpose?
I think we did. I mean, I really like the idea of, like, you got to put up or shut up in a lot of ways, you know? Like, he was saying that if you don't believe it, don't list it as a value then, you know? Just don't even give yourself that bit of whatever, you know, that distraction slash credit, you know, just, you know, my wife always tells me that, you know, you need to do three things well. You know, if you're trying to do too much, that's, you're defeating your own purpose, you know, be a good, you know, so for me it would be, you know, good, be a good husband, be a good father, be a good worker. And, you know, the rest of the stuff will figure itself out.
Yeah. How are you doing on that? I think you're doing great, Dan.
Thank you very much, Mark. You know, so I mean, you know, but it even if I wasn't doing it, the point is like, all right, here's your goals. You know, focus on the important stuff.
Yeah, I just like the getting past the actual minutia of your day. It's more, what are you about? And you make your decisions based on that. And that's how, and if you're, I don't want to take, look, it's not easy to, for some people, for myself or whatever, to be perfect and on task and organized, have your calendar going, and I've got everything where it needs to be, and I do that daily, and I don't trip myself up. But I think if you do orient to, like, this is what I'm about and this is what I'm going for, at the end of the day, like, you'll be further along. And either way, it was good to talk to Sam. I hope people enjoyed it. 312-981-7200. One thing that I was not accountable on today, I was going over to a Guaranteed Rate Field. And I went from the drive to come over. So when you go from the drive, normally I would get off at 31st Street. But when you go from the drive, you got to get off at 35th. And so when you get off at 35th and you're cutting over, I had to go through the cones to get over to make a right turn. So I was bending the rules here. So as I was cutting through, one of the cones got caught in the old wheels. So I can hear it. I'm going slow, and I'm hearing this thing. It's flipping around. It's flipping around. It's flipping around. And now I got a cop in front of me. I've got a cone in my car. I'm sort of cutting people off. Do I pull over? What do I do with this cone that was supposed to be back on, you know, by the highway?
Right, right, right.
So I just keep... The cop's not paying attention to me. So, you know, I'm looking for, if Big Brother's not going to punish me, or then I'm going to try to get away with it,
sure,
which is wrong. And so then I'm just going, and then all of a sudden the cone just spits out from my car. And I was like, all right, woof. But then it gets caught in the car behind me.
Oh, no.
So now I've taken this cone, which is probably no longer a functioning cone, and by not pulling over when I... You know, I compounded the problem. Now I'm worried that this guy behind me is going to kill me. So I quickly made a right turn and got in the parking lot, and that was the end of the day. But I feel bad about this. I want to just put that out there. That was wrong. It was cone gate going into Guaranteed Rate Field. Normally when I'm on the overnight show, something's going on with my car. That was the car scene today.
That is true.
Right? I mean, last time, I feel like it was like the last time I was here, I had my car stolen, which was amazing on Thanksgiving. But, yeah.
And did I ever tell you a story about how my car got stolen?
I didn't know your car got stolen.
My car got stolen. And so my wife was kind enough to surprise me with concert tickets for my birthday. So about 2 or 3 weeks before my birthday, I parked in front of her car. We went to the concert. I came to work right afterwards, and then I took the L home, you know, back to her place to pick it up, and it was gone. And I was just like, oh, crap, you know, like, you know, was there a tow? And, you know, I checked to make sure that there was, you know, there wasn't like a tow zone thing or anything. And sure enough, it had been stolen. Flash forward like 4 weeks, and I filed the claim with the insurance company. They were going to give me more than the car was worth. Right. So if the car was worth, the car was probably worth only like two grand, but right, they were going to give me four because of, you know, their speculations. Right. But I had to turn in a title and I couldn't find the title. Right.
Who could find these titles?
Right. So in the week that I was spending trying to find the title, I get a call from the cops one night here as Bill Leff and I were about to go on air. They're like, we found your car. And I'm like, well, all right. And they're like, here's where you go. Here's where you pick it up. The thing was about to be chop-shopped. They had taken like the decals off and all this stuff. The only reason they found the car was because the person who stole the car left it on a street that was having street cleaning that day. The car got a ticket And so they abandoned the car after it got the ticket, and then it amassed like two or three tickets during the course of the action. By the time the cop was writing the third ticket, he looked up the license plate and realized it was my car, and I got it back.
I always wonder why the cars are getting multiple tickets there.
Yeah.
Did you ever drive that thing again?
I did. I brought it back to life. I brought it back to life. And it was nice because that was the year we were getting married. So, I had been without a car for a little while, and, maybe one day you'll find out there's a lot of hurry up and wait when it comes up to weddings. So a lot of meetings that you've got to get to and things like that. So having the car back was huge because I could actually make it to these meetings without taking public transportation, getting there on time. So
thank you for that vision. Hurry up and wait. Mm-hmm. Okay. On that note, I'm going to run away from this conversation. We'll get to news at the top of the hour. 720 WGN.
Go, go, go. Chicago Cubs. Win, win, win that game. Go, go, go. Chicago Cubs. Get that pennant fame. Don't forget. Chicago Cubs. We do care for you. And you bet. Chicago Cubs. We are loyal to.
I don't know if I ever heard this one. I consider myself a fairly competent borderline expert on Cubs songs. Where is that from, Dan?
That is courtesy of Rick Geezer one day on Sports Songs. He played that for us. That is Marie Fuller, 1969's Go, Go, Go Chicago Cubs.
Now, that is a vintage Geezer contribution right there. I mean, I could bust out a Men in Blue for you. I could do the Beach Boys, Cubs, Cubs, Cubs. That one I never heard. Big day in sports today, not for the Cubs, who are off. They play the Nationals tomorrow at Wrigley, or for the Sox, who also are off. Sox had a four-game winning streak coming in here, but then got swept by the Yankees. Great game in the middle game, but New York in control in Game 1 and Game 3. They're off, and the Indians coming in. But the Bears really start the preseason tonight, the Hall of Fame game. That doesn't count, so Mitchell Trubisky will be on the field tonight with the Bengals. That's a 6 o'clock kickoff, and a lot of people are going to be paying attention to the PGA Championship as well, which opens up today. Tiger, can he, will he ever win another major? Jordan Spieth's trying to finish off a career Grand Slam, so that's all going on today as well. I bet you Steve Cochran will be touching on that in the Steve Cochran Show this morning. But it is the anniversary. Sort of. I guess we're now a day past. But 8-8-88, the first ever night game at Wrigley Field. And that was making the rounds yesterday. Dan, you were you there, or your dad was there?
My dad had a ticket, yes. I was not there, but him and his friend John had tickets. And then, obviously, didn't get to see a game that night.
I never wanted Wrigley to get lights. I was, 14, 15 years old at the time. I was anti-lights. Loved day baseball, would still prefer day baseball. More fun to go to a game during the day. I get it. More money at night, TV ratings. There is a benefit that you're not getting cooked in the sun, although whenever I go to a baseball game, I like to sit in the shade. And then even if it's 95 degrees, I'm still okay because I'm in the shade. I don't mind a nice upper deck seat. Give me some shade. Let me relax, watch the baseball game. But we pulled one clip just for history's sake from 8-8-88. So this was Harry Carey, and this was Bill Murray, and this was 8-8-88.
Hello again, everybody. Harry Carey at Wrigley Field on this noteworthy night indeed. 8-8-88. That's the date. And this bud's for you, Bill Murray.
Dying under these lights until you handed me this thing.
Hey, it's such a pleasure to see you, especially on a noteworthy event like this one.
Well, I don't know how I feel about night baseball. It's great in the minor leagues, but it's someplace else to go in town besides your restaurant, which is a good thing.
You know, how's your mother, by the way?
My mother is, she's off the booze, real pretty, but she's doing really well. She's doing great.
That bit you put on when I was sick and you were on and did such a great job, the bit you did about your mother, among other things, I think it should be a special cassette. You ought to sell about 10 million of them.
Well, I've got 200,000 of my own, which I'm willing to unload for some sort of a price. But my mother really wants too big a percentage, so I'm keeping them in the garage right now at home.
Have you thought about broadcasting baseball as something after you're tired of being a great star of movies, stage, television, screen, whatever you have.
I think when I completely lose my mind here, I'm going to step right up into your spot here in the booth.
There's no doubt about you being a true Cub fan, is there?
Well, I went with the blue and white tonight, figuring I could look like the ground crew in case I got thrown out, I could get back in. It's really beautiful. It's the most beautiful park in the world, and it's pretty under the lights, too. That's what I was hoping.
Tell me, Bill, where are you making your own now, in Hollywood or in New York?
Well, I'm making it in New York.
What's happening in your career? Anything new?
Well, I made a movie called Scrooge that's going to come out. Scrooge.
I'll bet you got to be Scrooge.
Yes, that's right.
And I would imagine that's hilariously funny.
You have a vivid imagination, Harry. You really do. It better be funny. There's going to be big trouble for me. Yeah.
Bill, good to see you. Stick good around for a little while. I know it's warm up here. Okay. Bill Murray, a priceless guy. Don't go away now, because we're going to be back with the first night baseball game ever played at Wrigley Field. Coming up in a moment.
I mean, how do you not miss that? What? That is just pure genius. How's your mother? So bizarre. And Bill just stays in character. R.I.P. Harry. I think it's beautiful. One of the things about the whole modernization of Wrigley, it's awesome that you get to see him for the seventh inning stretch. That is priceless stuff. And of course, 8888 rained out, but then I loved looking at the lineup too of who was out there. Sean Dunstan and Vance Law and Andre Dawson and Rhino and that whole crew. So a little bit of history. As we were talking about earlier tonight, Murphy's Hot Dogs went away. You think about the park back then. You had Yum Yum Donuts, and you go over there now. I am curious, like 312-981-7200, for those people that do partake in Cub baseball. Do you enjoy the whole scene over there now? I mean, it's so incredibly nice. Like the park at Wrigley's nice. The restaurants are so nice. You got Big Star in there instead of Taco Bell. You've got craft beers left and right. You've got white wine reductions going on. You got a balsamic something, a drizzle here and there. I mean, it's like walking into like Yahtzee's, you feel like you're slumming. Can't go in there. Can't go back to Bernie's. I'm all about the new. You've got Jenny's ice cream. It costs like $7 for a cone. But it's very nice. It's really well done. We're going to have to get the hotel. No more salt and pepper. The diner, no. Can't have that. Salt and pepper. Two eggs. Potato. Toast. $4.95. No.
Pick Me Up is still there.
The Pick Me Up Cafe is. So, are you pro new or pro old, Esmeralda?
I mean, I'm not a big fan of Wrigleyville to begin with.
Yeah. Okay. So it's the same for you then?
Yeah, I stop at whatever that street where the Pick Me Up is. I'll go around.
That's as far as you'll go up to the Pick Me Up Cafe.
I'll go around.
I like the Pick Me Up Cafe. Do a nice milkshake at the Pick Me Up Cafe. Underrated dessert at the Pick Me Up Cafe. If you haven't been to the Pick Me Up Cafe, what is it? That's Roscoe and Clark, right?
Yeah. About school, maybe?
That little island sort of situation over there. Yeah. No, it's Roscoe, believe me. Well, maybe it could be one further
I'm
north.
I'm not sure.
One further. Regardless,
I believe you.
It doesn't matter. Dan Pro. New or old?
You know, we were there, actually. My wife and I were there this past Saturday. And, I would go old just for the old feels and everything. But it is kind of nice to have things. Like, we attempted to take my daughter to her first baseball game last year. And she was two. And
go out to the park. It's beautiful.
Right. I mean, and the nice thing about the park is that, you know, you can then go into, you know, the stadium. So we actually watched the game on the big screen for the first three or four innings because we knew she wouldn't sit. And so that was really nice. And, you know, having nicer bathroom facilities and all that stuff. And actually, we were celebrating our anniversary and we had looked into getting a room at the Zachary, you know, so we could just do it up all one big day and
wow.
having dinner there. And it's a bit pricey. So we did not end up happening. But, you know, it is kind of nice to have that stuff there. But I don't know if I like it more than the way it used to be, you know.
How much is the Zachary?
The room that it was, so is also Lollapalooza weekend, so we weren't sure if that played a factor, but it was four bills
to stay at the Zachary.
Yep.
You get like Cubs soap in there. They like
for that price, I better get a Cubs player in the room giving
right,
me the soap.
Right, Chris Bryant checks you in. That's not.
Yeah, they all got to work at the Zachary.
Right,
after I like the that game. Idea.
There's Rizzo after the game. Wow.
They have to hurry up the games because it's like, I have a shift.
Right. Well, that's the real reason they built the walkway between the two places, you know? And that way they don't have to they can get right over.
630 texting, as a landlord, go Cubs. See that? Thank you for that text, 630. Because so many people in that neighborhood have complained. We don't want this. We don't want that. Do you realize how much your property values have gone up? Do you realize how much your rents have gone up as far as if you're a landlord to be able to? I mean, the Cubs are making you dough. Lots of dough.
But then also, I mean, that Wrigley Field has been there forever.
Right. Uh-huh.
It's always been like this.
Well.
Regardless of the big fancy stuff. It's always been crazy over there. So don't, like, you can't complain that there's more people now.
Right. You knew you moved into a neighborhood where there was a ballpark. That's all true. I mean, it was different. You had, back in the day, you'd have the rando, you know, staggering guy that would go to be the one guy on the roof with a folding chair, and he'd be drinking a Miller Lite up there or whatever, a Budweiser, and having his day. I mean, that those days are long, 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 long gone. But you still, to your point, Esmeralda, you chose to live in a neighborhood where there's a ballpark. You, I mean, come on. 422, good morning. Mark Harmon sitting in for Nick DiGilio today. Great to be with you, and I'll be back tomorrow night, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Get to do the night side, so looking forward to that. I got something special for you here, Dan. How handy are you?
Not at all.
These are 100 skills that everyone should know. Esmeralda, your handiness, I'm guessing.
Oh, none.
Zero?
Yeah, no. Like, I'm not good.
Like a light bulb, bad? Can't.
That's not being handy, though.
It's a little bit handy. Just, you know, I took the light bulb out when it was no longer functioning, and I put a new one in. I count that, Esmeralda. I give that.
You know what? I have high ceilings. I can't reach them.
See?
So no,
you'd get even more points for getting the ladder out there. What do you think you could escape a sinking car?
Yes, because I've seen stuff on it.
Yeah, what would be your strategy? You're in.
You
a
gotta you gotta find an air pocket. You gotta break some windows or something.
The old break windows air pocket.
I believe.
Dan, you got a strategy on a sinking car?
We probably shouldn't be speculating, but I believe you have to wait until the car is fully submerged to allow it to pressurize.
A full submersion.
Yeah, so don't try to open the door too quickly because you won't be able to. You got to let it fully submerge, and then at that point, it'll be easier.
According to popular mechanics, the moment your car hits the water or before, if you have the presence of mind, you're supposed to lower your window. The electric motor should work even in salt water. If the car floats for a few seconds, then you slither out the window. Go for the old slither out. However, what you were talking about, Dan, if it sinks right away, and you, Esmeralda, I think you touched on this, the water will rush in, it'll fill the interior. I think that's that air pocket you're talking about, which sounds bad, but it's actually good. It equalizes water pressure, allowing you to open the door. So, first move, slither out. Otherwise, let it fill up, open door. So now I feel like everybody is in a much better position for having the radio on at 4:24 in the morning. We can all get out of a sinking car, which would be big. I don't know why you'd ever be in a sinking car, but that's something they touch on. Do you know how to paddle?
I actually, oddly enough, I hear a lot of reports of cars going into ponds, retention ponds and lakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, so, it happens. It's happening. That's for sure. How about painting a room? Do you know how to paint a room? Can you do a painting? Save yourself some dough.
You get one of them wheel brushes? You know,
the wheel brush?
What's it called?
A wheel brush.
Is it?
I don't know.
Roller?
Roller. There you go.
Yeah, right.
And then you just, you got prime it, I think.
A priming?
Unless you get a prime and paint in one. They do have those. Yeah, I know that.
You got to put tape up on stuff.
According to Popular Mechanics, a good paint job starts before the first can of paint is open, team. You prepare the room. That's the first thing you do. You got to remove all the hardware, the door latches, the receptacles, the switch plates, all that. I don't know exactly know what that is, but you get rid of those. And then you don't just fill the small holes in the plaster or the drywall. You enlarge them first so the compound can be pushed in place. You want a larger hole. Does that make sense? Dan, you don't look like you're buying in.
I guess that makes sense.
I usually, when I've moved and I've made holes in the walls, I fill them with toothpaste. Because I heard that was a quick, like...
Is that Colgate? Is that Aquafresh?
You don't use a gel. You gotta use the
white
old school stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so like a nice salad.
I read that somewhere. Like, it's a quick, you know, if your landlord doesn't like the holes, so you cover them with toothpaste.
A fresh-smelling wall, perhaps. Do you paint the ceiling or the walls first, team? What's the guess, or do you know?
Always top to bottom, right?
Why do you paint the ceiling?
I wouldn't have guessed that. Dan knows. Dan, I trust you.
Thank you.
Paint the ceiling, then the walls. Do you know what size brush you're supposed to use?
I do not.
212-inch brush to cut in the finished color at all corners and against the trim. Then you switch to the roller, apply the paint in a W pattern. The old W pattern.
Right. And then you fill it in.
And then you fill it in. What are you... writing the stuff?
I own a house now, so
I would just get one of them sprayers.
Yeah, those look awesome.
Those look fun.
Mm. All right. I mean, I'm impressed here. All right, I think we'll get to news on time here. I've got a couple more here for you. A couple more on how to make your life better. Although this is the 100 things you have to know to be a human being. That's what we're talking about. 720 WGN. Good morning, 4:35. Mark Harmon in for Nick DiGilio. Hope you're having a great start to your Thursday. A little Bears football tonight, and got some golf going on, too, and a beautiful day to listen to WGN Radio, as always. I'm going to get back to the things you need to know in life in a second, but I do want to get the story that Dan sent me. I love the concept of being an entrepreneur. And we have, I'm going to take an Uber on the way home here, as that will be my transportation home, but I will not be doing it in a horse and buggy like our Amish man is doing up in outside of Detroit, Michigan, in a small town known as Cologne. There is a news report that a Cologne resident, his name is Timothy Hochstedler, he has, quote, taken it upon himself to offer a newfangled type of taxi in St. Joseph County. He is going with the horse and buggy that he's calling the Amish Uber. So basically, if you're hanging out on the road, you want to flag him down. He doesn't actually have the app, but he's going to pick you up, and he's just going to Uber around in the horse and buggy, Amish style. And that, for just $5, Hochstedler will get you where you want to go, wherever it is in town. $5, you get to ride around, you know, live a dream. For me, like, when I think about the Amish, I think about Witness and Harrison Ford. You ever see that movie, Witness? No?
Just the bits and pieces of it.
That's one of my favorites. But that is a beautiful thing. So, the creativity is a beautiful thing. I had an Uber story that I wanted to share that's now slipping my mind, so I'll get back to it in a second here. I apologize, as apparently the brain not firing the way it should be right now at 4:37. Good morning. Welcome to 720 WGN. Opening bell coming up here at 5 o'clock.
I've got a quick Uber story if yes. You want to. So, I think his last name was Pentazis, but Mike is his first name. I know that for sure. Mike is the guy who lives in infamy because that Bears Monday Night Football game where the kicker, you know, kicked it through the uprights and he jumped out of his seats and into the stands to catch the football as the field goal was going through.
Greatest catch ever.
Yep. Made it and, you know, made it on Letterman and always, you know, on ESPN Top 10 when they do that type of thing, where he actually was on our show because he was part of a band a few years ago, and then he is now an Uber driver and occasionally drives our guests who are coming on to our show
is
to the
right?
station. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like a full circle.
Right.
WGN Pantazis story. Hey, however, people that drive Ubers that I talk to, they all seem to be having like a great time. I love it. I work when I want to work. I don't work when I don't want to work. Money's decent. Have a conversation, talk with people. I feel like there's a certain level of skill in doing it. Hey, Dan, if you had to, could you build a shelter?
No.
Esmeralda, how do you feel about building a shelter?
Like a lean-to? Like a crude
yes.
little hut thing?
Right.
No.
That. So here's how you do it, so everybody knows. Very important. You find a small dead tree, about 10 to 12 feet long. That's going to serve as your ridge pole. You got to have a ridge pole in these situations. Then you lean it against a boulder or a stump or a branch, something that's standing like 3 to 4 feet off the ground. And then you lean as many small branches you can find against the ridge pole, crisscross them with smaller sticks, and then you next thing you know, you got to find a thick layer of leaves and grass, and there you are. You got your shelter, and you're good for a day or two, perhaps.
Could you start a fire if you needed to?
Could I?
Yes.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, Dan, because starting a fire is most definitely on this list. And as somebody who did go to Camp Nabagamon and participated in Canuck, Camp Nabagamon Outdoor Crafts, I did learn the value of finding, you know, birch bark off a tree as a very solid lighting component to your fire and making a nice little square. I can start a fire.
Wow.
Can you?
No.
For real?
Nope. I couldn't. I mean, I'm sure I could try, but I, you know.
The way I just described that was not exactly the best. You put the little twigs on the bottom with the kindling, your leaves and whatnot, and then you build up a bigger base around it. Correct me if I'm wrong here, 312-981-7200.
You want it in like a triangle shape, right? I remember hearing that.
You want a triangle in the middle, but then a square around it.
Okay.
That's kind of the... The way they describe it here, to find dry fuel, look for standing deadwood and broken branches stuck in tree limbs. That's good advice from Tom Laskowski, director of the Midwest Native Skills Institute. Then you place the material next to your cheek. If it feels cool, it's too wet to burn efficiently. You do not want that cool sensation. To fuel a one-hour fire, gather two large fistfuls of tinder, which is what At the Carm was talking about on Twitter. Please follow me. Such as cacti, crushed pine needles, all that. 30 twigs, pencil size sticks, that. And then you form a teepee, which is what I was saying. They're a little triangle teepee with three 6-inch tall sticks, and the smaller sticks are on the floor. And then you lean these smaller sticks against the teepee, leaving the doorway to face the wind. And then you place the next size sticks on top, repeat that twice, and then there you go. You got your fire rolling. Did that make sense?
A little bit. I think I got it.
You can light up some Fritos.
Is that your play?
You know they'll catch fire.
Are you a car camper, Esmeralda?
I prefer to camp in one of those places where there's at least a toilet 10 minutes away.
I thought you were going for a hotel room.
I go glamping.
What's glamping?
It's I've seen it. You have like what are those, like a lodge? There are those very fancy tents.
Oh, okay, yeah. An upper scale. Yeah. You're willing.
I'm not a big camper.
What about
too many bugs?
Get to look out in the stars. Be a part of nature. No, not going to sell you on that. Do you know how to do the perfect push-up? This is something you need to know in life.
Oh, no.
Dave Bennett definitely knows this. But if there's one guy at WGN who's got a nice proper push-up, I would go with Dave. Your feet should be no farther than 12 inches apart, okay? So we got feet are pretty close. Hands are about shoulder-width apart. Your body's in a straight line from heels to the shoulders. Then you bend your elbows to lower your body as a single unit until your upper arms are parallel to the ground. And you return to the starting position with the arms fully extended. Repeat until ordered to stop. Why this is one of the 100 things you have to know how to do in life, I'm not exactly sure, but it's on the list.
Do you stick your elbows out?
Yes, your elbows are going to be out, absolutely.
And then does your face have to touch the ground?
Face does not need to touch the ground, no.
So how low do you go?
I think you get your chest as close to the ground as possible.
I had been told you want to be able, like, if somebody puts a fist on the floor, you should be able to touch the top of the fist if you're doing it properly.
That's too low.
That is pretty low. Karim, how many push-ups could you do right now?
I could probably knock out 37 push-ups.
You think you could do 37, really?
I could probably do 37.
Perfect ones, though? Proper
I don't even
alignment.
Care about perfect at this point. 37 is a big number, man.
Around 37, but and around perfection. So it might come. I mean, I would will myself there that I just put the number out. I think I could do 37. Are we going to do this in the break?
After the break.
I mean,
I'll give you $37 if you do 37 push-ups.
No way. Come on.
I will give you 37. That is a lot of push-ups.
You don't think I could do 37 push-ups? Really?
I couldn't do more than 12.
He works out, though.
Oh, that's right.
I went to tennis camp.
Yeah, he goes to tennis camp for fun.
Well, what else would you do with your life rather than go to tennis camp and hang out with high schoolers? It was a great, great, great time. Do you know how to take the perfect portrait? Can you take a good picture?
Like the actual taking of the picture or posing for the picture?
No, that would be taking the picture.
Properly frame the face. Hit the button.
Mm-hmm.
Hit the middle to focus, and then you hit the button on the phone.
To properly frame a face, opt for the zoom between 120 and 150 millimeters, says Lynn Donaldson. She shoots for the National Geographic Traveler. I'm thinking that's probably a higher level of grade than anybody that is on the show right now. Any wider, you're going to risk exaggerating the features. We don't want an exaggerated feature. But zoom in too much, and you can add the illusion of weight because longer lenses compress space. We don't want that either, right? So you want to opt for a simple background. Avoid bright light directly in front of the subjects. That would be the people you're taking a picture of. Those are the subjects. And you can almost always use a flash in the sun. It evens out the skin tones. It makes wrinkles and dark circles disappear. So there you go. I think we're cooking with gas right now. Whole nother level. Great picture. If anybody wants to take one of me, that'd be great. Put it on the old Instagram. 720 WGN, good morning, 451. Wrapping it up here, Mark Carmen with you, and for Nick DiGilio. Brian Noonan will be back tonight, sitting in for Nick. I'll be doing 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. the WGN Nightside tonight. Good to have you along, and hope your day is off to a nice start. We're doing a little fun here to wrap up the show, the skills that you absolutely need to have in life. Dan, how are you on ironing? Do you know how to do? Can you iron a shirt?
We mentioned this yesterday. Brian Noonan is actually a big fan of ironing.
Is he really?
Yes, huge fan. Does it quite a bit. I have a steamer, so I have lost all ability to iron. I just steam my shirts whenever need be.
Why did Noonan bring up ironing?
Because we were talking about, I forget how we brought it up. Oh, we were talking about doing chores. He enjoys ironing.
He enjoys ironing. My brother enjoys ironing. I am not into ironing. There's a dry cleaner. It's a dollar. I'm in. However, it's one of the skills that you need to have in life. So let me throw it out here. What you need to do. First of all, you got to forget the towel on the countertop. You got to get an ironing board. Ironing boards are good for ironing. Think of it as a workbench. First, you spritz the shirt with a nice fine spray of water. Everybody knows that. You get a nice fine spray. And then the important thing is you start with the back of the collar, pressing the tip to the center. Then, with the small end of the board in the sleeve, you press the back yoke, the piece between the shoulders and the sleeve. Then you iron the sleeves, cuffs first, maintaining the crease from the previous pressings. And for the body of the shirt, start with the collar on the left, buttons up, rolling the shirt as you press. That seems that is incredibly detailed.
Yeah.
And kind of daunting. I don't know if I could pull. I'd have to read that back about five times to really understand what they were talking about. But yeah, that's how you iron a shirt. We're here for you. 4:53. Good morning. Have you ever hung food in the wild, Dan?
No, I can't say that I have.
Because if you go camping, like real camping, you got to put your food up. Otherwise, they're coming for you. So according to this, you're going to find two trees at least 20 feet apart. You're going to tie one end of the rope to the base of one tree, and you're going to toss it over the branch 15 to 20 feet high, and you're going to throw the other end of the rope over the equally high branch on the second tree. And then you're going to attach your bag to the rope in between, pull the line taut, and secure the rope to the base of the second tree. This is not how we did it at Camp Nabagamon. There was no thing as the two trees. It was just sling it over a really high branch up there so a bear couldn't climb up and get it because bears don't climb trees. But this is an upper-level move.
But, question number one is, you know, evading a bear chasing you on this list because we just got the answer, if so. Two, though, wouldn't other animals be able to get it then? Like,
I guess if the food is just dangling in between the two trees,
that would be tough to...
That would be a situation just, that would be untenable.
Tight rope-walking squirrel or something? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, back in the day, we used to hang the bear bag. That was always a terrifying moment that somehow there was a bear out there that if you didn't do that properly, the bear was going to be in your campsite and was going to take you out. You know, there aren't any bears, though, if you go car camping in, say, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
No bears up there. So when I was car camping with a bunch of buddies about 10 years back and we were woken up by this animal that was eating the Doritos that we left out and thought that it was all over, this was it. I mean, I was literally praying to the Almighty, please don't let this bear eat me. Finally, we flashed a light and thing ran away. We got out the littlest footprints of all time. It was like a raccoon in the campsite thought it was a bear in Wisconsin, in like Lake Geneva. Yeah, no, that wasn't going on. But I learned. I learned. Let's do one more. Last one. Changing a diaper. You should know how to do this exactly right, Dan. You have a tip?
I do have a tip. My tip is actually, if it's only number one,
uh-huh.
Number two is always a whole different story. But if it's only number one, what you do is you get the new diaper, you lay it out, and then you place the baby on top of the diaper. So as you take off the diaper that has number one in it, and you slide it out, the baby drops right into the new diaper, flip it up, tape it up, you're done.
That seems like you've got that mastered.
Well, I've caught that. You know, my sister-in-law works at the daycare that, watches our kids, and so that is how they do it. And I'm like, you change probably 57 diapers a day. I'm going to take this tip as the people who do it most, you know, quick. You have to do it very quickly. That is what you do. I'm going to steal
that is
from.
Very important with boys, especially.
Oh. Speed.
Because otherwise, you know, accidents happen a lot with the boys.
Mary, this says lay the baby on his or her back on a firm padded surface with side railings. Unfasten and open the diaper. With one hand, gently grasp the baby by the ankles, raise the baby's bottom, and slide out the diaper. Still holding the ankles, clean the baby's bottom with a sanitary wipe or a wet cloth, wiping downward to, that situation. Slide the new diaper under the baby, lower the legs, release the ankles, fold up and fasten the diaper. You with me?
That's very complex.
That is very complex, and holding the baby by the ankles does not last that long.
No.
Because somehow they have, you may be 10 times stronger than them, but somehow they find a way.
And they're probably screaming at the time anyway. Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, according to this, that's the way you change the diaper in the most efficient manner. All right, final timeout. We'll wrap it up next, 720 WGN.